Hello?
Hello?
Lynn Gaddis?
Hello, Lynn Gaddis.
Hi, this is Sheree.
Hello, Sheree. Millet. So we're going to start here in about 4 minutes.
Okay, sounds great.
Okay.
And Sheree, are you in warmer climes?
No, I got
everybody
back.
Everybody can't hear your discussion as you're discussing online. Hello?
Yes, okay.
Okay, just thought I'd tell you.
Thank you. Just saying, the snow machine and the snow is good out in the Wasilla area.
Oh, good.
Anyway, hopefully you'll, if I don't get to tell you, have a Happy New Year's.
Yeah, Happy New Year. You too, Tammy.
Thank you.
Who are we waiting for online?
Well, I don't think we technically start until 10 a.m., and it wouldn't surprise me that folks may have a moment or two to try to get online. So a couple minutes.
Yeah, we'll probably give it till 5 after to make sure. But as far as I know, the only one I have not heard from is Mr. Baker. Everybody else I have at least had contact with, so I'm assuming they are going to be.
Yeah, our Representative Millet. Yourself, Representative Tammy Wilson, and myself, Lynn Gaddis, are we the only three at this time?
They're the only ones who have currently spoken up, yes.
Oh, gotcha. I'm here. This is Brad.
Oh, there.
This is David.
Well, so there you go. The ones who have spoken up. Okay. If it's okay with you guys, since it's already 10 o'clock, I think we'll go ahead and just go through how we're going to do this, and that way we'll give a couple more minutes as well for people to come on. Okay?
Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay. So it is 10 o'clock on December 31st, and this is the House Education Sustainable Task Force, and we'll start with those who are here online. We have Representative Gaddis, Representative Millet, Mr. Neese, and who else?
Sherry Covey.
Okay, Mr. Covey. Anybody else online as far as the committee goes?
Brad Keithley.
Okay. And Mr. Keithley. And I'm Representative Tammy Wilson. And what we're going to do today is that we are going to go through a draft document. I'm going to read it page by page. We'll end at one page, and then we'll go to the committee, and if anybody has any questions, they want to add anything, and then we'll go to the next page, and hopefully, unless there's some major changes, and if there is, I have my computer with me, we might take an at-ease and re-email out to make sure that we have it all correct. Does that work for everybody?
Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect. Just so people know that this is the first time we've actually done this teleconference, everybody, I believe, is in a different location, so this is kind of some of the technology we're looking to enhance so that we don't have to be on a plane so much. So we're going to start with page one, which is called Basic Principles. Everybody have it in front of them?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. It says, as made clear in the Alaska Constitution, education is a core mission of state government. Alaska also believes in local control of education, where appropriate, through involvement and direction by local school boards. Alaska is facing a challenging fiscal future, which requires new ways of thinking in order to ensure the long-term sustainability of core state programs. Anybody have any comments or additions?
I guess my comment would be the last bullet point specifically requires new ways of thinking, and I know that we'll get into that later on, but I just want to reemphasize, I think that's where we are.
Okay, thank you, Representative Gaddis. Anyone else? Okay, so is there any objection on how this one is stated? Hearing none, we're going to go to page 2. Sustainability. Bullet point 1. Education is a key to the long-term sustainability of Alaska. The purpose of education is to help ensure an ongoing basis that all students will have every opportunity to succeed in their education and work. Point 2. A critical component of achieving sustainability in education is to ensure a resilient and sustainable funding stream on which education leaders can rely. Any comments?
Can you read that one a second time?
Okay, you want the whole page?
Just that first paragraph, the first sentence.
Okay.
And just to clarify, David, do you have a copy of this PowerPoint?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, just
want to be sure. I'm only on my first cup of coffee, so.
Okay, that's okay. I learned to read in third grade, so here we go. Education is a key to the long-term sustainability of Alaska. The purpose of education is to help ensure an ongoing basis that all students will have every opportunity to succeed in their education and work.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was looking for the word equal opportunity instead of every opportunity.
Okay.
Or near equal.
Okay. So how do people feel about changing every to equal?
Madam Chair, this is Jerry.
Yes.
I think that's a intriguing word to include in there. I'm not sure what the definition of equal is. I suspect and believe that that's been debated extensively, and it's been come up in court cases and on and on. So I don't know that I don't know what the implications of equal mean specifically in terms of the statement. So I guess I question it, not in a negative sense necessarily, but just in a clarification sense.
Okay. Well,
and I understand that because most court cases, as you said, have tried to determine what equal means in such a large state.
Well, yeah, and I think when we were looking at the Moore decision early on in our testimony months ago, one of the things that she brought out was that even though the word equal is missing in our definition and our Constitution, the idea behind it, and I think the key word after that is opportunity, not equal education, but equal educational opportunity. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, it doesn't matter where you are, you should be able to get a basic or an equal. I don't know if equal is the best word, and that's why I wanted to toss it out there. The way we've got it written right now, the every part, I don't think it's as clear. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I like the equal educational opportunity. So we're
yeah, that's what – yeah. Instead of saying the word equal, which has a lot of legal behind it, it's equal educational opportunity. In other words, you're not going to have Latin out in the middle of some small area unless you're doing it virtually or something. But that doesn't mean that a kid should be excluded from having an opportunity simply because of their location. And I don't know what the – I looked at that sentence a bunch of times trying to figure out how do you write that differently.
Okay.
Well, I think – yes, this is Jerry again. I think if you put the word equal in there, you're going to open up a debate about what does equal mean. We have our own conceptions of equal, and, you know, equal in fact may in the mind of some people mean that you will have Latin available, that you will have things available to students that we currently don't have in some settings. And others may say, well, if you can access it or if you, you know, but I caution again.
How about the word similar?
Well, I don't know that there is a word I believe this statement is trying to convey the intent the belief of this committee that we want to provide the best opportunity we can for all students to to get an education and that will help, that will prepare them to succeed in their education and work.
Well, see, I think I like that better. The best opportunity to, what you just said, I think was clearer than the first sentence we had working with. You know, the best, in other words, the best opportunity rather than equal.
Well, the best opportunity we can provide with the resources we have.
Well, but that's what I'm saying, is that the best opportunity the state can provide is what we're working within. Because, you know, we're looking at the money situation and the availability. But, you know, it's our job in the state is to provide that best opportunity.
And if I might comment or ask a question, David, was there a specific place you were going with that comment? I mean, with your change, I think I can guess what you're trying to get at, but I don't want to, which would encompass other areas, I'm sure, as well. But what were you thinking about when you talked about equal?
Well, thinking about equal, it's like I don't feel like every child, when we took the visit out to Kivalina, I talked to a student out there, and she had moved into Seward with her parents who were taking an AFTEC course, and the school was too big for her. It was overwhelming. But when the idea was planted, when she came back, she wanted to be a lawyer. And sitting in Kivalina and wanting to be a pre-law, pre-student, I didn't feel like she had the same resources as far as opportunity resources as a child sitting in Seward would. And it's not just because of the fact that Seward's on the road system or something like that. It struck me that, you know, here's a gal that's out in the middle of nowhere land in Alaska, and she's got this big, magnificent goal, being a lawyer. And I think that's terrific. And as a state, we should be fanning that flame instead of, you know, just saying, well, it's a little difficult right out here. And I guess it's the opportunity part of it. And I think that's what we hammered on a lot in this. So when I'm looking at that statement, it's kind of like, you know, we'll give them every opportunity. It's good, but I think Jerry said it really, within our means. But as soon as you start putting in within our means or within our what we can
right.
deliver, we haven't met that child's challenge.
Okay,
it's the part I'm looking at.
Mind
okay,
as far as conversation is concerned. So let's just say the state of Alaska, we don't have a law school, so we haven't met even that opportunity from a higher education standpoint. I mean, we could go on and on with this conversation, but I think that I understand where you're coming from, but I'm not entirely sure that all communities can meet all opportunities. Sometimes we as Alaskans have had to go outside to get educated, and it's not what we would like the best, but it's what we can afford. And
okay.
Somewhere there's a balance. And I think
like I said, that's why I was kind of looking at that word, maybe to maximize the opportunity.
Saying maximize, were you thinking that to allow or make available online legal courses for this student and not to inhibit?
Yeah, so I mean, if her school is limited in what it can offer, she should have the opportunity to take a distance learning class or something.
Okay, this is Representative Wilson. How about if we just take the word every out?
That'll work.
Could you read
that
again, Representative?
That word out.
Could you please read that sentence again to be sure we're clear? The new sentence.
This is what the new sentence would sound. Education is a key to the long-term sustainability of Alaska. The purpose of education is to help ensure an ongoing basis that all students will have opportunity to succeed in their education and work.
Yeah, I like that a lot better.
I can live with that.
Okay,
right.
And I know joining us is Mr. Halcrow as well, so I'm going to tell him he can jump in anytime he wants to.
Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for joining us. So is there any other discussion on this page?
Chair Wilson?
Yes?
This is a grammatical. I think the word on goes between ensure and in the first paragraph. Ensure on an ongoing basis.
I agree.
Okay, say that again. I'm sorry.
I think the word on goes between ensure and an in the first paragraph, so that it reads to help ensure on an ongoing basis.
Boy, I'm not a grammar specialist, but I would disagree.
Then I withdraw. It's not worth a discussion.
Okay.
Okay. So with that, do I have any other objections on this page?
Madam
Chair,
we
can come back, so it doesn't make it to where you can't. We're just trying to. So go ahead, Mr. Hopro.
Okay. Did you want to move to the next page, or did you want to move to the next graph that talked about achieving sustainability?
Okay. We read the whole page, and so we're discussing this page. So if you still have something on this page, then go ahead.
Okay. But let me just make sure, because I printed out the documents that were sent to me yesterday. So the first page I'm looking at says sustainability, and there's two bullet points.
Okay, the first page was basic principles.
Okay, I got that. But the page we're on now is sustainability, is that correct?
Right, and it has two bullet points. Education begins the first one, and a critical begins the second one.
Right, and that's my question. Have we discussed? I haven't heard discussion on the second one, but it sounds like you wanted to move to the next page.
Well, nobody had any questions on the second one, and that's why we were moving on. So if you have a question on the second one, we can discuss that now.
I do. I have a couple of comments. I'm not quite sure what we would mean by resilient. Does that mean when it goes down, it comes back up again? I don't know how resilient factors into funding.
Okay.
Shouldn't we just say an important component of achieving sustainability, a sustainable funding stream on which, I mean, resilient leads me to believe that it's up and down and up and down, you know. So if we're talking about sustainability, that's more sustainable than resilient.
Right, and I have to agree with Mr. Halcrow in regards to that, because resilient really could mean a lot of different things that we've not even explored. I think our main issue was to try to determine what's sustainable and what efficiencies and what we need to do to change to keep funding sustainable, and I'm not sure where resilient plays a part. So that was a good catch, Mr. Halcrow.
So do we want to take out the word resilient and the word and? Have it a critical component of achieving a sustainability in education is to ensure a sustainable funding stream on which education leaders can rely.
I would have a problem with that.
Okay, so I'm going to take that as a yes. And there may be people speaking in the background to others. You're going to have to hit mute if you want to have other discussions. Otherwise, it's coming over the line, so I'm not sure who it is. Okay, so I'm going to read it one more time, and then if everybody's okay with this page, we'll move on. A critical component of achieving sustainability in education is to ensure a sustainable funding stream on which education leaders can rely. Okay, so is there any other questions on this particular page?
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I'd like to go back to the first bullet again. And where we crossed out the word every, I would suggest looking at the idea of adding the word the. The purpose of education is to help ensure on an ongoing basis that all students will have the opportunity to succeed in their education and work.
Okay. Any issues with that one?
Oh, sounds good.
Okay. Get rid of the rest of this. Okay. Any other discussions on this page? Okay, so we're going to move to the next one, which is a state strategic education plan. Okay, and it says a third party or stakeholder group could evaluate and make recommendations on a state educational plan. I'm sorry, I'm correcting myself. Hearings would take place involving the public, enhanced data collection and usage, discussion of pros and cons of state curriculum for K-6 in reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
A couple of things. In two of these bullet points, I think the language is very passive rather than active. I mean,
okay.
If we're a task force making recommendations, we shouldn't say that stakeholder groups could evaluate. We should say they should evaluate. I mean, that's what we're doing on this task force. We're making recommendations. And so I think with the first bullet, I think the line should read, third party or stakeholder should evaluate and make recommendations on state educational plans. Same with the second one. Hearings should take place involving the public. But, I mean, even with having said that, I mean, this seems to me like hearings, I mean, why wouldn't hearings take place involving the public? I mean, I don't know. I guess there's several moving parts on this page that I'm kind of confused about. I mean, either we're making a recommendation as this task force, or we're just giving suggestions.
I like the word should. I think that has a much stronger portion to it. And if we're going to develop a plan, if a plan's going to be developed, then absolutely we want to make sure that people realize that it's going to go out for their participation.
And I'm not a but I like shall even better than should.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do too.
Oh, Andrew, hello.
Madam Chair, please.
Yes, go ahead.
How about will?
I'm stuck on shall.
Yeah. I guess in kind of the statute world or, you know, legislation world, from my understanding, shall is kind of can't get out of it type of thing. So I think if you're trying to really make sure it happens, that's what shall would bring.
Yeah, this is Representative Miller. I think we should go with shall also, just because legally it means that they have to take action. It means you have to do something.
Okay, and the one question I have on the first bullet point is, are we talking, because I have, you know, state educational plans. We're not really talking about plans here, because isn't that our problem in the first place? We're looking for a plan that everybody's kind of going along this path together.
Well, could you say that again? Because I would disagree that it's not our problem. So I wasn't sure I was following the line of thinking.
Well, I guess as we've talked about, you know, having all the different school systems that we have a lot of, we don't have a state educational plan in which, I mean, we set goals like how much attendance and how, you know, what the percentage is for graduation. And we've asked districts to go from possibly, you know, anywhere from maybe a 40% start rate to 80% and then all of a sudden get to 90. Well, you know, those goals are nice, and I think we need those goals, but there's no actual, you know, plan to get there in how we do. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out first if, you know, if for a state strategic education plan, are we talking about, you know, a plan for the state achieving these goals, or are we talking about different plans for different goals?
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I like the idea of a state education plan, period.
And so I
think that a state education plan, the process of developing a state education plan would certainly involve the public, and it would include several components, one of them being data collection and usage, statewide curriculum, statewide salary schedule, et cetera, et cetera. All of those things could be addressed under the context or within the context of a state education plan, period.
Yeah.
And Mr. Covey, would you want to change the word evaluate to develop? Or would say a third party or stakeholder group shall develop versus evaluate? Because, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what they're evaluating if we don't have it.
Right. That's correct.
Develop and implement.
Well, yeah, and also there's something in there that I think we should, you know, we heard a lot from the Commissioner of Education that, you know, it's our problem that we don't have a state education plan. And so somewhere in there it has to be that they you know, must adopt or shall adopt the recommendations of the recommendations of the group, the stakeholder group. You know, he's looking for direction. Let's make sure we're giving it to him.
Okay. This is Andrew. Could I jump in here for a minute?
Please do.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. First off, I'm kind of a little. Let me start by the conversation we're just having. So we're advocating, and as Jerry said, I agree, there needs to be a state education plan. But as we all know on the phone, you know, what a state education plan means to people means different things. And you have 60 different very individual lawmakers who might view an education plan differently. And so I guess I'm wondering, okay, this plan that they're going to come up with, really, what is the likelihood of it actually being adopted? But more importantly, when you look at the first couple of the first four or five words of it, a third party or stakeholder group, who would that be? So who would the group be creating this plan, and what chance would this plan have to be implemented, given the fact that you got to get past the legislature and the governor and everything like that? So I guess it's more of a process question.
Well, and I
great
think what,
question.
This, what this paper kind of does is that those are these are things that we're going to develop clearer answers in the next year. These are issues that have kind of risen to the top as we've been out to different districts. We've asked questions through the department. Is that we heard kind of like what Representative Milt said is that, you know, the reason we don't have any kind of plans because the legislature hasn't done anything to actually put into statute. Now, whether it should be in statute, as you said, or does it get a plan that comes in a different way? This is kind of a starting point in which we're going to answer those questions you just brought up.
Oh, okay. All right. So basically, this is a work in progress.
Correct. And this is just saying, you know, one thing that we heard a lot, you know, out there is that all these things, especially right now, have been changed from our, you know, standards to now they've changed the curriculum, teacher evaluation, all these things out there. And districts are just worried that as soon as they put it in place, things will change again. And so would this kind of stabilize the environment if we had a plan that everybody was on the same page for? But I think the details of it would be something that's going to take many more hearings to figure out who would do it, as you said, and then how those hearings would be conducted, you know, what more do we need for the data, you know, kind of the specifics.
Okay. That answers my question. And just a side note, as we move forward, I really think that, you know, we need to work hard to identify what that third party or, you know, that group of stakeholders is, because I don't think we should leave that to question. I think that should be a very specific and identified recommendation about who's going to come up with this plan and how it's going to work.
Absolutely, and I think looking at states that have been successful who may have been challenged in educational and have brought their state grades up, you know, would be some of the first places to be looking as how they put these things together. This is not something that others have not done. But very good point.
All right, this is David.
Yes, David.
All right. Hey, be a good place to put in there, and I like the idea that we're going with a positive, you know, authoritative way of saying things. But, you know, one of the problems we came across as we were doing this is we noticed the state legislature has failed to define what an education is. In the state of Alaska, would this, like, you know, as we're sending it out to the stakeholders and we're going to define who they are and everything, wouldn't the very first step in this entire process be to charge the legislature to come up with what an education in the state of Alaska is? Because we've been playing with the elephant a long time, and you got, you know, the blind men with the elephant, everybody's coming up with a different answer. But in order to address this specifically, We somebody's got to agree what an education in the state of Alaska is. And DEED hasn't done it. The legislature hasn't done it. But I mean, that's your basic starting point for the entire conversation is, who are we going to charge with telling us what an education in the state of Alaska is? Or are we not going to charge anybody and we're just going to let everybody kind of feel their way around the problem again? And, you know, I'm a little concerned that we're handing it off or we're delegating it a little further in the future and that we're going to look back 25 years from now and say, well, we had an opportunity. We could have said, do this one thing, and that's our starting point. Does that make sense?
Well, Well, yeah, because I think that's kind of what the lawsuits have always been about.
The lawsuits are, yeah, we're letting the court define everything in the state of Alaska as far as education. We have another one coming up on the funding part of it. It would be really nice if we charged the legislature with defining what a basic education in the state of Alaska shall consist of. Even if it's as simple as everybody can have reading, writing, and arithmetic at a sixth grade level when they enter eighth grade. I mean, we don't have that definition, and we're building all the variables off a definition that we have not come up with the basic on. Does that make sense? And I don't know if this would be the place to include it, or it's a topic for further discussion, or I really think we need to tell the legislature they need to define what education is as the first step in that process.
Well, how about if the committee defines what we believe education is?
Well, I wouldn't have a problem with that. You know, the committee believes education is this, and from there we proceed with the stakeholders.
Well, I think, you know, probably have this as a bullet point, probably actually as the first bullet point on this, would put how important it is that we define what an education means. We're going to do it today, but I think you have a good point that if we don't know specifically what we're doing,
it's very hard to
put all the rest together.
Very hard to hit a target if you don't tell me what the target is. I mean, if you tell me that an education in the state of Alaska shall consist of A, B, C, D, then you can say, and here's how we're going to implement the plan to achieve A, B, C, D. You understand what I'm saying? So I don't know if you want to have that like as the first bullet point or we want to have it as a sentence. I understand the need. I mean, this is not something you solve in 3 months. Like Andrew said, it was the same problem he was looking at 10, 15 years ago. But you can't make that the big step without making the first step. And it's very clear that for the last 50 years, the state of Alaska has not said a basic education in the state of Alaska means most children, not every child, but most children can do this. And I don't know if the committee wants to come up with that or what. It's just an idea to toss out.
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. Two things. Number one, I think this is an important conversation to have, but I think it's a separate topic than the strategic plan that we're talking about. It may predate, it may be something we have to address prior to the strategic plan, but it's not necessarily a strategic plan issue. It's a foundation underneath a strategic plan. Secondly, you know, I think we need to, it will take us a long time to explore this question. Does education mean access? Does it mean opportunity? Does it mean completion of certain requirements? All of those things have to be considered in how do you attach resource to those opportunities. The reason it has not been defined to the satisfaction of some people for the last 50 years is because there's no simple definition for it, frankly. And I think to jump in too quickly and propose a specific definition is going to be fuel for future lawsuits, fuel for people feeling that they're not getting their fair share of the resource, of the opportunity, whatever it might be. So I don't think we should shy away from it, but I think we should separate it from a strategic plan. Because it's a separate issue in my view.
Okay, so we should include it as a separate bullet then in a different area?
In my view.
Okay.
Right, or maybe it gets put on our next agenda to be the first thing that we discuss.
And if I might chime in, as we had town hall meetings and went around this state, many parents had a different idea meant to them. And truly the parents went from, I want my kids to be ready, reading at a specific grade level, to know if they're proficient, and really be willing to be able to go into the trades. Some folks wanted their students to be ready to go into college. So education meant different things to different people, and I think we could define what it means to us, but there are folks throughout this state that have a different idea of what it means to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I go back to the first bullet that, that we're working on here. I think, in my view, I would like to offer that, you know, that the idea of a state education plan is something that we all seem to be in agreement with. And I think simply developing a state education plan and striking the third party or stakeholder group out of that sentence would be more appropriate, because at this point we have not explored who would be responsible for the development of a plan. But I like the idea of just saying that as a group, the task force believes we should develop a state education plan.
So it would say a state educational plan shall be developed, period.
Yeah, yes. And I would, rather than say educational plan, I would say education plan.
Okay. A state education plan shall be developed. Does that work for everyone?
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to get rid of everything else in that and just say a state education plan shall be developed as our first bullet point. And on the one with Mr. Neese, I'm going to make sure that we put on as our first discussion is more about the whole defining education, because I think that is a discussion that's going to take quite a bit of time.
Agreed.
Okay. So then we're on second bullet point, hearings shall take place involving the public.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody okay with that?
Yep.
Okay.
I am too, but Tim, this is Representative Millett. One thing I do want to say is the Telker brought up a good point of we should define who the stakeholders are, because I know when we went through and did the, you know, the energy policy, it was really important to get the right people at the table. And so I think we should probably spend some time either now or, if you want to keep it for the next year to do, but I think we should have an idea of who should be those stakeholders. I think we should make the suggestions in this document.
I agree. That's why we kind of took it out now, because I think we need to develop that. And that's why the first bullet point will only say a state education plan shall be developed. We're taking everything else out so we can have a better discussion about whether or not we would want to do a third party, you know, somebody completely outside, or whether or not it would be a stakeholder group of Alaskans and what all that would mean. So absolutely, it needs more discussion.
Well,
okay.
And if I might jump in, I think one of the thoughts of looking at a third party was to keep it from being political and keep it from being hijacked by any particular entity and really focus on what's best for kids.
Correct.
And Representative Milligan, and you can have a third party in your stakeholder group that maybe is the moderator of the group. I mean, we did that. We had a moderator that was a third party that didn't have any involvement in the state of Alaska, but had education background, had done it for other states, and talked and been through this process, you know, many times before. So I think there's an opportunity to combine both those ideas.
Okay, and that's why we took it out, because we're going to have more discussion on that. Good point. Okay, so we're going to go down to number 3, enhanced data collection and usage. Anything there? And then the last one, discussion of pros and cons of state curriculum for K-6 in reading, writing, and arithmetic. And we've had some feedback on whether it should be K-6 or K-12.
Madam Chair, if I could go back to the bullet point that says enhanced data collection and usage. Actually, I'd like to take the D off and enhance the data collection and usage.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's not a past tense. It's a moving forward one. Gotcha.
Right. And quite frankly, I'd like to comment on that. A couple things, and we've noticed them, that we have data collection by our K-12 folks, by our university folks, by many different groups, but they don't necessarily share with each other. And I think that that was one of the thinkings in regards to enhanced data collection and the usage that we use, and basically who's in charge of it and who's in charge of, God forbid, not having any breaches in that usage.
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I agree with everything that Representative Gaddis says. I would suggest that after the word collection, we add the word management. So it would say enhance data collection, management, and usage. And then I think we're really looking at a K-20 system here for doing that, so that, you know, we take kids all the way from the beginning through their college education if they go that far.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
This is David. Okay, when we're talking about the data collection, management, and usage, do we need to define which points of data that we are talking about?
That would be in our future conversations, absolutely. And who owns that data?
I was going to say, because we're talking about the electronic portfolio that travels with the parent, so that they can also access it also, instead of, because right now if anybody's listening that isn't in education, when your child moves from school to school, there's a folder that travels with them with all their test scores and their attendance and their shot records. And parents, if they pick up and move from Fairbanks to Anchorage, actually have to go into the school, physically fill out a request to send that data. And we're talking about that information plus state data, correct?
That was my thinking.
Okay, so I think maybe put the word educational data in front of it. So, you know, we know we're talking about everything to do with the kids' education from when they enter our system till they leave our system, and who has access to it. But my concern is that we collect the data, we collect the test results, we collect the shot records, everything like that. It's confidential material. That's why it's in a locked folder at the schools. But it's also public interest material in that, you know, if you're trying to analyze how a school or a program is working, you have to have access to that data. So there has to be different levels of access to the data. So, you know, just in that data point thing, it's like you might want to have something like to be determined, to be coordinated or something, so that you know exactly which points of data are available to which subset of groups. In other words, the parents would have all the test records and the shot records, and they wouldn't actually have to go fill out a form. They can just take it with them, and when they transfer in and out, because we have a very mobile population. But the Department of Education would be able to look at their records without having to see the individual child. Does that sort of make sense?
Yes.
And David, this is Representative Gaddis, and I think that's what the word management says.
Agreed.
Okay, so it's collection, management, distribution?
No.
Or, I mean, like I said, the concern is there, you know, you got your privacy issues and everything else. Are the controls on it inside the management for the distribution, or is it something that, like, parents will have free access to?
Well, and that would be my idea, certainly.
Right, management would be who would be able to have access to it. It would also include, does the state own it, or does each department? Because right now, each agency thinks they own the data. So I think the management would be the complete look at who would, you know, own the data, who would be able to see the data. All that would be in the management portion of it.
Right. And one of the things that I have a concern, this is from years and years and years of having to go into the principal's office and look at test data that wasn't going to be distributed until after the school year was over. Just ensuring that anybody that's working with the kid in their education has access to that information. That's something for me. I mean, that's the tool, that's the measurement teachers use when they're trying to find out how the kid's doing, how they have, you know, if they had a good year as a teacher. It's something that the ownership is very proprietary depending on who gets the data. Like right now, testing's owned by Deed basically, and districts will do testing for children, and they kind of own it. It's just that ownership issue. It needs to make sure that it's something that it's, you know, freely accessible to anybody involved in that kid's education within the management scheme of, you know, your checklists and stuff.
Right. So the follow-up meeting that we'll have will be defining what management means, and that'll make it a lot clearer.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. So I have enhanced education data collection, management, and usage for K through 20.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on this, but this has been one of my biggest frustrations over the last 4 months. Is when we ask questions of the department or, you know, various agencies, they repeated that they have the data, but they don't have it aggregated so it's understandable. I mean, I don't know how they do their job without, you know, some kind of a decent data management system. So I think that this is an area that I think we really need to focus on moving forward. And like I said, I don't want to get into the weeds, but I want to caution against simply using enhanced education data, because there's some data out there that's not related to education, but that is. For instance, you know, you can share all the test scores you want and whatever else.
I totally agree with where you're going, and there might be somebody out there. No, I'm just kind of joking. I have had a bill that I've been working on all this summer in regards to data, and I would sure like to pick your brain as we go through this to be sure that I didn't miss a lick on this data bill. So I wouldn't mind touching base with you afterwards as well.
Enhanced is the first question. Do we even need the word enhanced? Because as Mr. Halker just really articulated, is that we're not even using the data that we're collecting and managing and using it right. So really, is enhanced the word that we want to use?
Wait a minute, let me finish, because I mean, I think this is important. It's not just the data they have now that they don't understand, but it's other data that they should be evaluating.
Right.
You know, DEED should not only be evaluating test scores, but they should be evaluating data with regards to health and human services. I mean, you know, from what I've heard the last 4 months on this task force, and trying to reconcile that with, you know, what I see with some of these statewide teacher surveys coming back. I mean, there's a complete disconnect on the data that we're evaluating. I mean, you can look at graduation rates, you can look at GPAs, you can look at SATs. As David has mentioned, there's a million different tests out there you can use as benchmarks. But when you look at some of these surveys that are coming back, and the teachers that say the biggest inhibitants to learning, both in rural or in urban, are things like, you know, going on outside the schools, you know, English as a second language, domestic violence, drugs and alcohol in the community. I mean, that's the kind of data that needs to be looked at in conjunction with what's going on in these schools. I mean, you know, we were all in Kivalina. I mean, honestly, how do you expect the teachers, those young teachers in that school, to teach these kids to get an education the way we want them to? I mean, I don't care what your education outcome goal is. I mean, the environment just simply isn't there to learn, and we need to take that into consideration, because in order to fix the problem, we have to understand the problem. In my concern is that we are, you know, we've heard great presentations on curriculum this or teacher quality that, and it's like, okay, but what about those things outside of the education system that has just as much of an impact on a kid's ability to learn than what algebra they're being taught or, you know, what tests they're taking? And so when we talk about data, that's what I want to do. We have to, I mean, you know, we've been, I mean, Jerry knows, I mean, for decades we've been struggling with this same problem about how do we improve our schools in a changing environment. And the reason we haven't been able to make any ground is because we keep looking at this data in a silo, and everything is relevant. And so, like I said, when I look at some of these results from this statewide teacher survey coming back, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, this has nothing to do with curriculum. I mean, this has nothing to do with you know, reading at eighth grade. I mean, it does, but it has more to do with other things that I think DEED and the other departments in the state need to start collaborating on. I mean, like I've said before, you know, there's a reason why the high school graduation rate at South Anchorage High School is 92%, and my alma mater, East High School, is 75%. There are reasons for that, and it doesn't have anything to do to a large degree with the type of teachers that are in the schools. And I just, I'm on my soapbox, and I'm going to get off now, but when we move forward with data collection, Representative Gaddis, if you have that bill, I really think, you know, if we're going to try and make education sustainable and we're going to try and turn the corner finally, we've got to stop dinking around with these programs and look at the system, because we've got a ton of programs. I mean, whatever you want, tech, you know, VOTech, whatever. We have all these programs, but there's no system in place, overall system in place, to make sure that the money we're spending is actually, when it gets inside those four walls of the schools, is actually has a chance to succeed. So, sorry, I'm on a rant.
No, that's okay. So what I'm hearing you say is that, how about if it said develop data collection, management, and usage for K through 20? And it's just data collection that will be determined, whether it's by a specific bill or a more clarification in other committees. Does that...
And I'd love to see something in there about, you know, something like interdepartmental collaboration. I mean, so we basically put in there that, hey, you know, DED needs to start talking to, you know, public safety. They need to start talking to Health and Human Services. I mean, these are the silos we need to break down. So it can't just be like the education. It's got to be kind of cross-boundary, if you will.
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I would agree with Andrew, and I would say that it's not just interdepartmental, it's interorganizational, because we have the university sitting out there as an independent organization that has much of this information as well.
Okay, any other comments?
Yeah, this is David. One of the things that came up in one of our early meetings was the fact that when DEED went out to look at accounting records in the 53 school districts, they found out there was no standardization between any of the accounting records. So the first thing that they did to make it easier on themselves was to use a standardized system. And I think in your data management and collection and distribution part, defining a set of data as standardized. In other words, it doesn't matter if the kid's coming from Fairbanks. You can look at the data and compare it when they're, and that's a bigger picture thing, using more of a standardized approach. In other words, you know, we talked about it sort of like a franchise without any rules. By standardizing your data, you sort of align all of your various curriculums. And back to Andrew's point, the business of education is to educate. And when we have a little bit of difficulty is when we're trying to take care of all of the out-of-school problems. And when we're looking at the state of Alaska's responsibility, and that's what the task force was looking at, are we funding, you know, education adequately? When I look at education, my definition is schooling, and so I look at it with that viewpoint. So if we're going to go whole child and everything else, it makes it really difficult then to define everybody's responsibilities. And I think we need to stick to the task of, well, we're focusing on education and or schooling, whatever you want to call it. And that for me has been my belief as an educator, is if you can give a child an education, you give them that opportunity to escape that social situation that they're in. And that's the purpose of education. I can't fix what's happening at home, but I can certainly give you the tools to escape it by giving you an education.
Well,
that's my soapbox.
And I'm going to jump in, and I could not disagree with David more. And I simply would point the committee to one of the most successful school districts that we've heard from in the last 4 months, which was the Petersburg School District. And what was their main tenet? Their main tenet was taking care of the whole student. And that's why 3 out of the 4 of the schools in their districts are 4-star, and the fourth one's a 3-star. And, you know, David's right. We can't solve society's problems. But at the same time, you can't ignore society's problems and then wonder why a kid shows up hungry or from a domestic abuse situation and can't figure out how to read by the 3rd grade. I mean, you can't look at kids who have, you know, no pre-K, show up with a vocabulary of 500 words on their first day of kindergarten and expect them to graduate, you know, in 12 years. I mean, this is the problem we've had for decades on education. Society has changed, but our views on education haven't. You know, I mean, that's the biggest thing. And we can sit around all day long or for another couple of years, talk about curriculum, talk about test scores, but until you address the whole problem, we're not going to get anywhere. I mean,
okay,
you know,
so we're not going to sit around for days, so I'm going to interrupt here, and I'm going to read the sentence again. Okay, so are we ready?
Yep.
Develop inter-organization data collecting, management, and usage for K through 20. And then we can get into the details from there, but is that pretty much what we're telling people we need to do?
Still like the word standardized.
This is Representative Millett. I think we should probably be a little more specific on interagency cooperation, on who should be cooperating, because I'll tell you, I agree with David, but I agree with Andrew. I come from my district of Service High School. The demographics have changed completely in the 6 years that I've represented the school. It's gone from a high income school to a low income school, and the grades show it. The graduation rates show it. So you can't ignore that. But I think we also need, you know, we need health and social services to have data, and we need to have them help us understand on an education basis how they can help us get those kids out of those situations or what aid they need. I mean, I think it's got to be cooperative. If you don't have cooperation in interagency, we need to define the agencies.
I completely agree with you, so I'm going to take you out of the classroom right now and put you back 10,000 to 20,000 feet above. And so that's some of the defining that we're going to have to do in other meetings. So right now we're kind of looking generally, and what I'm hearing people say is that we do need the organizations. Yes, it might need to be defined. Who would be collecting it, where it would be stored, all that's kind of getting into the details into a future meeting. But right now we're trying to just show the importance of that generalization.
Agreed. Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I agree with what you just said. One point of clarification. David remarked earlier about the use of finances at the school district level. We do, as you know, have a state chart of accounts, and all school districts report their finances according to that chart of accounts. And it is an apples and apples measure from one school district to another. I just wanted to clarify that.
And it seems like there may be some regulations right now out for public comment, so.
Out for comment from districts.
Oh, there's some coming from districts. But just on that whole thing on finances, the department collects a lot of stuff. And districts, again, are required to give a lot of information. It's not always as standardized as we would hope it would be. And this comes from somebody who took months to find the correct information on how much money is coming to some of the districts. So, there's a lot of different kind of charts out there. But, again, that's probably a more detailed look. So I think right now it's just we want to develop an inter-organization data collection, management, and usage for K through 20. Better to define later what we're talking about, the organization, where it would be collected, you know, who would be the parties to look at it. That would all be more into the details.
So the chart of accounts for the educational data would be developed later?
What we'll do is we'll make sure what there is currently, bring in some more districts to discuss what they are giving, what they get to see.
And what they'd like to see in there?
Right, and what would make it more usable, not just to the parents, but also to the teachers. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, that's what I was hoping. All right, thank you.
Okay, bullet point 4, discussion of pros and cons of state curriculum for K through 6 and reading, writing, and arithmetic. Those are kind of the three right now that we are going into for these tests. That's kind of why the three are mentioned.
Okay. Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I like the statement. I would like, however, to strike K-6 and leave that open for exploration as we move forward.
Okay, just leave it more general. I think that's probably a good idea. Any problems with that?
So could you reread that with the strikeout?
Yes, discussion of pros and cons of state curriculum in reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to quickly
go back. David again. Do we want to have the word discussion in there or definition of? In other words, discussion of reading, writing, and arithmetic.
No, it's a discussion of pros and cons of the state curriculum in those.
Right. Things. So, do we want to have a discussion of it, or do, you know, like Andrew was saying, do you want to have something that's more, we'll define, we'll act upon, we'll implement, you know, discussion of pro and con is like you're debating it, but you don't have a goal you're going towards. Well, what is the goal of that sentence?
Oh, okay. And I guess
if I could comment, I think I know where David is going, this Representative Gaddis, and I think that we should have the discussion of pros and cons. I'm not sure that I'm totally one place or another, hence the reason that I think a discussion is necessary, because when we talk about local control and then we talk about a state plan, that's certainly up for discussion, and I'm not entirely sure one way or the other. I'd like to hear why one is better than the other, ultimately what would work best for Alaska. So I still think that discussion is there.
I agree.
Okay, well, then I was wondering what the purpose of the discussion is, to come back and kind of come to a consensus then? Is that the purpose?
It would come from the committee, is how I see this, is that the task force would have these discussions, the pros and the cons, and then possibly give a recommendation whether or not to move forward, or maybe we just, you know, find out that it's not somewhere that the state wants to go or the district. So I think at this point, again, as Representative Gaddis says, we just need to have the discussions, need to bring parties forward on both sides of it so that we can see if there's any kind of will to go forward or not.
All right, so we're going to analyze and look at merit then, or?
I think we will debate it until we all come to some kind of consensus.
Okay, well, that's the part that's not in there.
No, this task force, we will debate it until we come to consensus.
All right, thank you.
We will. So I'm going to review this over and see if everybody's on the same page, okay? So State Strategic Education Plan, bullet point one, a state education plan shall be developed. Hearings shall take place involving the public. Develop inter-organization data collection, management, and usage for K-20. Discussion of pros and cons of state curriculum in reading, writing, and arithmetic. Are we happy? Or content, maybe might be a better word. Okay, moving on to the next page, hearing nothing. Funding. Bullet point one, and I'm just going to do the bullet point, and then we're going to move to the next bullet point because it makes it easier for my scribbling. In order to provide for an overall sustainable future for Alaska, state spending levels must be reduced across the board, with a portion of the current revenue stream set aside to provide for future generations. Any comments?
Yes.
Since
you talk about current revenue stream, would you not, after the first comma, say current state spending levels, utilizing the same word? And I'll read that just to be clear. In order to provide for an overall sustainable future for Alaska, current state spending levels must be reduced with a portion of the current revenue stream set aside.
That makes sense. Any other discussion?
I have a couple of things. This word current, I mean, this is kind of, we're supposed to be looking at sustainability, and I don't know how we define current when we're talking about possibly, when we are talking about the future. So it seems to me that spending levels, we should say that we need to ensure spending levels don't exceed the revenue stream, because it seems to me like this is very based in today. Current spending levels must be reduced across the board. I don't know what that means, and I don't know, to be honest with you, you know, we all know that that's simply not possible. You're not going to be reducing revenue across the board because in some areas you simply can't. You don't have that ability. So this is very vague to me, and it doesn't seem very workable.
Madam Chair, this is Brad, if I can respond.
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
So the governor's newly proposed budget does, in fact, reduce state spending levels. So an argument that we can't do it is disproved by what the governor proposed in December. And we know that current state spending levels the last 3 years have been the three highest in the state's history. So we know what those spending levels have been, and we know that we need to reduce them. Finally, it's not simply a question of reducing spending to current revenue in order to have a sustainable future, in order to have a revenue stream on out post oil, post when oil pays for everything. when oil's paying for part of it but can't pay for everything, we need to have set aside a nest egg, as ICER puts it, in order to provide a basis for future revenue. So it's not just spending everything we got coming in the door. We need to balance that with saving a portion of what we have coming in the door in order to build for a sustainable future. I think this is correctly stated the way it is.
Okay, I guess I have one question. I agree that the state spending levels must be reduced. I don't know necessarily across the board, because that would just be a determination by the legislature, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And there's some expenses you're not going to be able to reduce. And so I think that that's just simply not a correct statement.
So if we just say current state spending levels must be reduced and put the comma there and get rid of across the board, then that just kind of, you know, leaves that option of where it is to the legislature or the governor's proposed one.
Yes.
Is that okay? Because we're still really saying it's being reduced. We're just not being saying everybody has to reduce, although that may happen.
This is Brad. I'm fine with that change. I don't think it's achievable. I don't think that we can reduce from the recent state spending levels. I don't think we can reduce the amount that has to be reduced without reducing everything across the board. If you count capital, this year's proposed budget by the administration reduces education spending from last year's. I mean, we have to cut down so far that I'm not sure anything escapes. That being said, I can live with that. I could live with that deletion.
Because it could still be across the board. We're just not, you know, how it gets done.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. Anything else on the first bullet? Okay, second one. Recognizing that education is one of the core constitutional missions of state government, funding to education should be given a priority, but educational leaders should understand that overall state education funding needs to be reduced as well. Comments?
When I'm looking at educational leaders should understand that overall state education funding needs to be reduced as well, to say that goes without saying. I just don't think that particular after the comma is necessary, but I could live with it. I mean, I think it goes beyond educational leaders. I think it goes parents. I think it goes with all stakeholders. I don't think it just is the educational leaders.
Should it be the public instead or the state?
I think funding to education should be given a priority. The end. Period.
Period?
Yeah. That's where the period should be.
Well,
funding for education be a priority.
For conversation about
it. Something about
I
utilization
of the potential.
Wait. Representative Gaddis is going to finish, and then Representative Millett. Go ahead, Representative Gaddis.
No, I'm done.
Okay. You want to repeat what you said, because I couldn't hear it.
Well, I just think that particular last portion after the comma makes a specific jab at educational leaders, but I think, quite frankly, it doesn't talk to the rest of us. And I think it's all of us need to recognize that education funding should be given a priority, because that is one of our constitutional missions.
Okay, President Millett?
And my point is that the utilization and the accountability of that money and how it's used within the school district should hold those accountable for that. I mean, you know, we all know as legislators that sometimes the money that we send to education for whether it be energy, weatherization, whatever it is, doesn't necessarily go towards what we have advocated it go towards. So I think there has to be better utilization and better accountability for that funding.
Okay, so any other comments? If we leave second bullet point as recognizing that education is one of the core constitutional missions of state government, funding to education should be given a priority.
Representative Wilson, this is Brad. Could I speak to that?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I actually think this clause is one of the most important clauses that is in this presentation. The reason is – I think we have sent hugely mixed signals out to the public over the years in terms of money that's available for spending. And I think we have encouraged, frankly, a society that thinks that they can go to the state and get all their problems solved. I think it's time that we need to be sending signals back out to the state that can't go on, and that we are in a contraction mode back to something that's realistic from, frankly, something that's been unrealistic. I'm not wedded to saying to being directed solely to state education leaders. We could put it in a tone that said, but it should be understood. It should be understood that overall state education funding needs to be reduced as well. But I think one of the, at least from my personal perspective, I think one of the big things of this task force is to help educate the public that we've seen the high watermark in spending. We're coming back to things that are realistic, and I think that clause is important to send that message.
Madam Chair,
go ahead.
Yeah, I would adamantly disagree with Mr. Keithley. First off, this task force was created to look at 24 different areas of education, including adequate funding, not a predetermined that we have to cut education funding. So the task force's goal is a lot more than just figuring out where we can cut education funding. Secondly, I absolutely agree with Representative Gaddis that the period should be after priority. I don't know what it gains for us to say, oh, yeah, and by the way, we need to cut your funding. I mean, how do we know that? You know, if for heaven's sake, if we started investing more in education and you could drive down corrections costs that have gone up 30%, why wouldn't we do that? Why wouldn't we invest a little bit more in pre-K to get a better outcome at the end? I mean, that's what this committee is supposed to be about. We're supposed to be finding ways of making education sustainable. And sustainability is not just how do we cut the budget. It's how do we grow an education pipeline that continues to produce quality kids ready for either career or college. I mean, so you know, look, I'm not going to debate the budget with Mr. Keithley, but the fact of the matter is you can't go into this saying, I don't care what it is, we're cutting education funding. I mean, it makes no sense, and it makes everything we're doing here irrelevant then. If we're just simply saying, after 4 months of listening to a whole host of school districts saying they've been trying to make ends meet for the last 4 years, for us to come up saying, you know what, yeah, so what? You know, you're going to have to look at decreased funding. I don't think that's beneficial to the future of this state, and I think it does nothing to improve education in Alaska if we approach it that way.
And if I could pop in, this is Representative Gaddis. I have to agree with Mr. Halcrow to the point of education given a priority. Where I may disagree is that we have a great amount of efficiencies and ways that we could do what we're doing far, far better. And I think that those efficiencies and what we could do and do it better. And I'll tell you, for instance, Andrew, going to a community where there is two school districts in the same town and they don't share payroll or share anything because, quite frankly, they don't have to. And if you were a business and you had Avis and Avis Light, one had vans and one had cars, you would certainly share services. So we have to do what we do better, and we have to do it smarter, and I think we have that opportunity, and I think that's what this task force could look at. Now, it doesn't mean that education shouldn't be given that priority that our Constitution says that we should give it, but I think that we can work smarter.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I absolutely agree with you, and I'm not advocating saying more money is going to fix the problem. I, like you, have concerns about where we're spending our money and certainly the data that we're gathering and how we're investing it. But, you know, again, I mean, you know, you can't say, you know, we're here to improve education and show up at the table with a predetermined outcome. I don't know how that benefits education.
If I may respond, Madam Chair.
Go right ahead.
So we're not starting out with that. This is at the end of the 4 month process. You can't look at the governor's fiscal year 2015 10-year plan and think anything but that we're going to have to keep reducing. We have read every year of the 10-year plan. We are out of the statutory budget reserve and the constitutional budget reserve by 2020. We are the state is spending itself off a fiscal cliff, and people have to recognize that. We have to. I don't disagree that we have to spend smarter. I think frankly that ought to be the focus of this. That has been the focus of this task force, to find ways to spend smarter. But we have to understand it has to be smarter within a declining context.
And I want to add something here too. First of all, I know everybody keeps throwing 4 months, and I just want you to realize that Representative Gaddis in my office has done a lot more than 4 months worth of work on this, and come up with a lot of the money and stuff on there. So I want to make sure the public realizes there's a lot of behind the scenes going on. But with that said, I agree with the educational leaders part may not be able to be there, but there is a reality here, and that, as Mr. Keithley said, our revenue is going down. Whether or not anything happens with the oil tax structure, we know that we are going into some very tough years, and the way things have been done are not going to be able to happen in the same fashion. And to think that we're not going to be reducing partially of education really isn't fair to the public. To not really put that out there as a point.
May I offer a suggestion?
Yes.
This is David. We all agree that education is a funding priority for the state. But within that funding, I think you need to have a subset that says, the operation of the school for education. In other words, the instruction component of it will take priority over your other expenses. In other words, we have spent a lot of money, according to our information, on capital improvements and other objects inside the system. And, they're talking about healthcare and stuff like that. But, the core mission, and this is where, I go back to that same thing, the core mission is really having a teacher in a classroom, giving instruction to teachers, whether they're in Florida or Alaska, because we had that distance component. But after that, given that education is a priority, you need to say something like, and instruction will, in the budget, take a priority over capital improvements or anything else. Because one of the things we saw in this last legislative session was legislators spent outside of the budget huge amounts of money on capital improvements that if they had gone into the classroom or into spending, we wouldn't be looking at that component of it. So I think after it has a priority, it should have something after that that says, and our number one priority is instruction or, actual classroom. I don't know how you define that in there, but the problem is that we spend it on everything.
Madam Chair.
That's my point on accountability. I mean, we need to have some type of accountability on where that money is going and what is our priorities. When we fund outside of the base student allocation on, $25 million here, $25 million here, it's never seen as money towards education. Well, it is, but we just need to have some type of accountability when we do those things so people understand that.
But my point is, when you do that, you're taking away money that could be going into the priority is the education of the child. It's not the AstroTurf in a school that everybody else is now going to want AstroTurf. So
not if schools at 20 below zero. But
it's like if you can make improvements, it's just like when we were talking about energy efficiency. Now, that's an operational expense, and operational expenses should take priority over capital expenditures. And everything you can do to make your district more efficient, whether it's staffing, consolidation, anything for energy efficiency, transportation, anything you do on the operation, we have an operating and a capital budget at the state level. We do not have an operating and capital budget at the school district level. And those funds all run together, and that's part of the issue. So I think after, education is priority, that the operation needs to be the priority before capital.
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. You do have capital and operational budgets at the school district level. In fact, the legislature is funding school districts with money to put in to programs of their discretion, and it's coming outside of the foundation program. I agree we need more accountability, but I think we need to look at the chart of accounts and make some changes there if, in fact, that's the desire of the committee. There are ways to do this, and I think it backs up to the issue of local control and some of the stuff we talked about the authority of school districts, school boards to make these decisions. If it's appropriate to make revisions there, then the committee should be recommending some revisions, specific revisions in areas that you'd like to see changed, and I think that's perfectly doable. Regarding this, back to paragraph 1 and 2 here, in paragraph 1, it says, in order to provide for an overall sustainable future for Alaska, current state spending levels must be reduced. And I think that implies education's not out of that. Current state spending levels, as determined by the legislature and the governor, must be reduced. And so they will determine, as Representative Wilson said, where those reductions are. I think it's fine to say that state education should be given a priority, but that doesn't mean that paragraph 1 does not apply. It's still subject to being reduced, depending on the legislature and the governor. So I think we have preserved that authority to do that in paragraph 1. And all we're saying in paragraph 2 is that, you know, education gets a priority, period.
Madam Chair, this is Andy.
Yes, go ahead, Andy.
I agree with Jerry. I agree with everybody. Good points. But one thing is that at some point we're going to have to cut, and education is going to have to be cut, this or that. We can live with that. But I think one thing we've learned is we need to do things differently. We need to have more opportunities, and there's proven things we can do to improve education. So I don't want to limit ourselves. That might mean more upfront now that's going to save us later once we get it set up. So I just don't want these words to limit us to where we're going the other way without even getting the system fixed.
12 ounce white chocolate milk or whipping.
Okay. So any other comments on this one?
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is Andrew. I would go back to Representative Gaddis's original suggestion and just put a period after the word priority and eliminate the rest. And I think Jerry hit the nail right on the head. The first paragraph basically encompasses, the second paragraph. But I would like to say again that, I think while I agree with Representative Wilson and, certainly, we know the last 5 or 6 years the legislature spent a significant amount of money and has gotten us into this position, but I would just point out the fact that we have not covered any ground in this task force about what investments might lower costs on the back end. I mean, we've done nothing on pre-K. We've done nothing on all of the studies that exist out there about the potential cost savings. So when we talk about red lines and we talk about declining budgets, we have to also realize we've done nothing to really identify possible investments up front, as Andy said, that might pay a return by lower cost on the back end. And I just want to point that out.
Any other discussion?
Madam Chair, one final comment from me, from Brad, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead, Mr. Keithley.
Okay, so I oppose striking this clause for whatever for that. I think we're missing an opportunity to help educate the public and the public that's concerned about education about where we're heading as a state. And I appreciate Mr. Covey's point about. It's almost a lawyer's point the second point subsumed within the first point. And so you read the two together, and you sort of get that indication But I don't think that's what my personal view is. I don't think that's fulfilling the step we should be taking about informing the state about where we're going financially and where that and the implications of that for education. That's all I want to say.
And I have one more point on that because I just want to share one thing. And some of this discussion has happened because everybody's thinking about that we're talking about the formula, and we're not. We're talking in this particular statement all the money that goes in into the capital budget and to additional amounts. I had a school board member that basically came to me and asked me to advocate for two different things. One was a capital project, and the other one was for more into the phase two and allocation. And I made the comment of, you know, we have limited funds. You're not going to be able to have both. And the comment back to me was, well, they come out of two pots of money. Well, they don't. But that's the way we've sold it, because we sell, you know, you have, you know, your bonds, which somebody thinks comes out of one. You have your major maintenance that something come out of another one, what legislators give you, and then the formula. But we all know, you know, at least in the task force, we're in the reality of that all comes out of the general fund. But because we have all these different programs and a lot of districts run off of grants from a lot of different agencies, I think sometimes we have missed the boat that this all comes from the general fund, most of what we're talking about. And you know, I think we could probably debate this between the committee, but I do think overall state education funding, and we're talking about all of it that comes in, cannot stay at the level that it's been in the recent years. So I don't know where we kind of go from here. I think we're going to just let it settle for a little bit. We'll come back and just have one last discussion if we need.
Can I throw one point in?
Absolutely.
This is David. One of the things we were charged with was defining whether or not the current level of spending was adequate. If I remember, and I think our statement in those two sentences, one of those in there, as Brad was saying, is we have to say, okay, this is where we're at. We can't go any further than this. And we may need to say in one of those two sentences that the task force believes that the current spending is at a adequate or unsustainable level. Our path of spending has reached a point where it's going to be unsustainable unless we do this. And the two that we're saying is, you know, it's important and that it's going to have a priority, but we haven't said anything as far as if we can't continue upon this path and or it is okay where it is right now. And do you understand what I'm saying?
Right,
yeah,
but if we say that it's not sustainable, then we're saying that we're going to have to reduce it. Because even keeping it at the level it is right now still means there's no...
But that needs to be said in one of those two sentences.
Okay.
Well, why don't we finish
Chair,
off
could
with...
I,
oh, go ahead, Mr. Covey.
Could I? Thank you. After the word priority and the period, how about if we said, however, the public should understand that state education funding may be reduced, period.
I would like to jump in on that one. First of all, I think that a new bullet is in order, and I'm somewhere between I hear Mr. Keithley say over and over the word public, even though we've indicated educational leaders, and I think what I hear Mr. Keithley saying is the public we need to be sure that we do the public relations aspect of letting them know that we could not continue on the rate we were going, that the efficiencies and the particular areas that we would have to cut, we need to be sure that the public is aware, not only the educational leaders, but the public, the same public that I think it was discussed somewhere that want turf fields or whatever else. Those are the folks that we're also trying to please at the same time that we're trying to educate our kids and look at pre-K and other areas. So I think there is a bullet point that indicates that we cannot continue spending where we're spending and at the level that we're spending at this time. And because I think overall, I think that's what we're saying.
But
But I don't know how you can say that, Madam Chair, because we haven't even addressed, you know, really what adequate funding is. Every school district we heard from said funding was not currently adequate. Now, even putting that aside, I mean, even putting aside, you know, their concerns that funding isn't currently adequate, I don't know how we make a statement like that when we don't even know ourselves. I mean, okay, so currently education funding is unsustainable in certain areas, but for those areas, and really, have we even looked at those areas?
Madam Chairman, if I can respond to that.
Right here, Mr. Keithley.
There's two ways of looking at this. One is to ground up from the ground up and say, well, we need these, we need this, we need that, we need that, we need that, we need that, and it all adds up to X, and this is how much we need. The other way to look at it is from the top down and say, we only got this much to spend, and we've got to allocate it across these programs, and we need to recognize that the programs have to go down in order to fit within what we've got to spend. Remember, at the very first session, I think it was us. I'm sure it was to us when David Teal was testifying, or maybe it was to the Senate. When David Teal was testifying, and he said, based upon current spending levels, by 2023, the big three, which are education, Medicaid and retirement assistance, are going to equal 105% of revenue. Remember that. There is no and everything else, payment for the legislature, payment for the governor, payment for the state police, everything else is gone. 105% of revenue. And that's not even setting aside the portion of revenue that we should be setting aside to put into the nest egg. There is no way that Alaska stays on this spending course. If it does, we bankrupt future generations. We tell resource investors, don't come here because we're going to have to tax you to the max in order to have anything in this state. So we have to recognize that's the track we're on. I understand that if you go to school boards and you go to, you know, parents, they all want this, that, and the other thing, and it all adds up to X. I understand that. But we don't have the money to buy X.
See, this is what kills me. I mean, we act like these decisions, these funding decisions in the past, have been done by some mysterious people, you know? I mean,
Mr. Halcrow, you need to let Mr. Keithley finish, and then you can have your turn.
I apologize. I thought he was done. I apologize.
Well, I'm done now. This is to me, sort of one of the cores of what we're about. Are we going to be honest with the public going forward, or are we going to continue the fiction that we can continue to add on to spending levels?
Okay, so one thing we had heard, you know, earlier on another bullet point is if we put a period after priority, would we? And this is something that we discussed at a couple meetings back, that, you know, what we're doing is not sustainable for those who were in attendance. And is this a bullet point that we say the public shall be made aware that current education spending is not sustainable? Does that get us to the same spot? And when we're talking about education, we're talking about all the funding. We're not talking about just the formula. We're talking about everything that gets put in, you know, all throughout the process. And that comes from new buildings to maintenance to energy to everything that goes to that level.
All right, Madam Chair, if I could jump in here, you know, the discussion you're talking about is when the committee discussed whether education was sustainable. I missed that meeting, but I listened to it on podcast. That was not a very open and honest discussion. I mean, when you opened that session that afternoon for a yes or no answer, whether education was sustainable, and only a yes or no answer, I mean, that negated any opinion or any discussion about how we make education sustainable. And, you know, I don't disagree with Mr. Keithley. I fought these fiscal battles 12 years ago, but what is this state's future without education? For God's sakes, you start pumping oil, we better have smart people here to diversify the economy. But according to what I'm hearing is that we just can't afford it anymore, so we're going to have to cap it at X, and, you know, God help the next generation.
That is totally unfair.
It is not unfair, Brad. It is not unfair. Biggs, listen to what you're saying. I mean, there's no room to even discuss. We haven't even discussed investments that might limit costs. How do we say that education funding is unsustainable when we haven't even discussed what the impacts on PERS TERS would be if you followed the governor's plan and paid it down? Does that free up more money? Does that allow for more investments? We haven't done any of this heavy lifting. None. And so to sit here and say, you know what, we just simply can't afford education anymore because, you know, we're going to run out of money for the next generation. What the hell are we leaving the next generation? Honestly.
Andrew.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait. This is Representative Wilson. Okay, we're all going to calm down. First of all, we're not taking education down to zero. So let's clarify that to start with. We're spending billions of dollars on it. And so there's going to be more discussion on how much, you know, we're putting into all these areas. I want to make a correction that it wasn't just a yes or no answer. Yes, we said yes or no, but then there was a lot of discussion on how people got to that answer. We didn't end the meeting there, so we're making some statements that aren't complete. So first of all, let's go back to, you know, we have the first part, the recognizing that education is one of the core constitutional commissions of state government. Funding to education should be given a priority. We can all discuss whether or not we can hold the same level. It's how much it might need to be reduced by, whether or not we shift from one department to another. That's not going to be solved today. The question right now that we're on is, does the committee want to make another bullet point? And I'm going to start with Representative Gaddis for her comment on whether or not this is a part that we want to put down, whether or not what we're currently doing is sustainable. Representative Gaddis.
Yes, I'd like to make that another bullet point. I don't want to focus on educational leaders, but rather the public.
Okay, so it would read, the public shall be made aware that current education spending is not sustainable. I know everybody on the committee doesn't necessarily agree. We can take a poll if you want. I think we pretty much have discussed where everybody stands. What is the pleasure of the committee? Do we have an objection to adding this in as a bullet point?
Madam Chair, I object. I just simply don't understand how we can arrive at that conclusion this early. And let me remind you that, you know, you had this conversation that afternoon well before this committee had even wrapped up its work. I mean, how do you halfway through a task force kind of come up with a final kind of conclusion? I mean, that was one of my concerns in my emails to you. How do we get there when we're not even done with our mission? So, you know, I disagree with the statement, and I disagree with the fact that the committee has really gotten enough information to come to that conclusion.
Okay, so we're going to come back.
This is David.
Okay.
Can I speak?
Yes.
Okay. Andrew, I understand your concerns. I'd just like to ask you a question, and I'll listen to your response, because, you know, I think this is one of the primary charges. In fact, it is the very first one on the bill that created this task force, is looking at the sustainability and, you know, whether or not we can do this. So my question to you, because we have not had a full discussion on this, is what parts have we not looked at that you would feel would help you decide, because we're going to have to decide one way or another. We're on a sustainable course or we're not. You and Mr. Keithley have differing opinions of whether or not it is. Mr. Keithley's looking at economics. You're looking at it as, you know, an investment in the future. And I understand both those arguments. What information would you need in order to decide, because you're going to have to decide one way or the other, what information would you need to help you come to this conclusion one way or the other?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, I would simply refer you to the 24 bullet points set out in House Resolution 8 that created our task force. One was determining whether funding was adequate, and certainly, you know, I mean, the districts we've heard from, the people on the ground have said funding is not adequate. We haven't spent enough time there. One of the charges was determining whether the current curriculum and current delivery of education was providing students with an opportunity for both career and college. You know, is the curriculum, are we preparing our students? Hasn't been done. As a matter of fact, I emailed the chair 2 weeks ago with a complete list of things I thought we had failed to address. I mean, you know, we haven't talked about outcomes at all. All we've talked about is input.
Andrew.
Okay. Wait.
The question was whether or not, what information do you need for sustainable? Don't care about the other 11 bullet points.
Okay.
What is it that we haven't had?
Okay, this is Representative Wilson. We could debate this for a long time. Again, this is the beginning point. It's the next step where we're going to go deeper into the things you're talking about. So I think we know where everybody stands. We have quite a few more slides to get through.
Are we going to include that bullet point or not?
Well, if you let me finish, I'll tell you.
Okay.
So since this is a task force and we're all voting members, we'll take a vote on this particular one. I'm going to have my assistant here call the roll, and yes or no on, I'm going to read it again. And it would state, the public shall be made aware that current education spending is not sustainable. So when your name is read, if you would please give a yes or no, I'd appreciate that. Representative Gatta?
Yes.
Representative Millett?
Yes.
Mr. David Neath?
Yes.
Mr. Halcrow?
No.
Mr. Covey?
Yes.
Mr. Keithley?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
How about Andy?
What about Andy Baker?
We're getting to you, Mr. Baker.
Yes.
Yes. How many yeses? 7 yeses, 1 no. Okay, with that passes, and we're going to go to the last bullet point. Cost of new Alaska State Standards, Curriculum, Assessment, and Teacher Development. I don't know if this could probably be stated, but I think the point on this one is that there, as far as I have seen, there's no analysis, no information out there at all for our districts to know how much all this is going to cost. And I think it's something that we need to look into more.
And this is Representative Gaddis. Representative Wilson, I think that could be said a little bit clearer as far as what we want to say. And I liked how you said that there needs to be an analysis of those items versus cost of.
So analysis.
Or
go ahead.
Or need cost of new. And I think that's what the point was. What is the cost
analysis? Is what I was looking for. Cost analysis of new Alaska State Standards.
I could live with
assessment,
that.
Teacher development.
Yes.
Does that work for everybody?
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I like that revision. I would like to explore another concept that, as we do a cost analysis of these things. That right now under our current system, curriculum and assessment, the costs of those fall upon school districts. And so when we do this cost analysis, I think we need to be inclusive of what's the overall cost of the state and what is the impact on school districts as they are challenged to, redefine their curriculum, purchase curriculum that's aligned to the assessments and standards, et cetera. Because knowing the cost is one thing. Knowing how it impacts individual school districts is entirely a different thing. So I'd like some recognition of that so that this task force, as it makes recommendations, is in a position to equate this cost analysis with what we discussed on the previous slide, which spoke to the state curriculum and reading arithmetic and writing. Are we looking at some type of a statewide purchase here that would offset the cost? Are we looking at a curriculum alignment that would relieve the burden on individual school districts to align their curriculum with the state standards? If so, there are, those are big implications for school districts, and I think that further exploration should uncover all of these facts for us. Thank you.
So if we had cost analysis of new Alaska state standards, curriculum assessment, and teacher development and impact on districts.
Thank you.
Yeah, and can I add in?
Absolutely.
David, one of the things that we heard from the school districts was that when a new mandate comes down from upon high in Juneau, they have to take the full brunt of this. Anytime you have a new curriculum, a new standard, I have a problem with that, because that takes away from your operating expenses, because now you have to go out and get purchases of books and technology or internet or whatever. And perhaps something in there about cost sharing between DEED and the actual districts, or if DEED will pick up the whole tab. Somewhere in there, we have to look at who pays for it every time we come up with the next best thing, because it's the next best thing that's holding some of the districts back right now, because they're getting ready for like online testing, and it's going to be a major part of their budget if it's not funded by DEED.
Okay, and I would think that would be part of the conversation. Does it need to be added into this bullet point?
Well, I'd like to make perhaps cost sharing could be added in as a word. In other words, when you're doing stuff like that, I feel really bad for districts that are cash strapped right now, and you turn around and say, here's our new testing regime, and they have to send their people in for training about the test regime, get the coordinators, they have to pay for that, they have to buy the tests, they have to, train it up, set aside time, set aside bandwidth is what it sounds like we're doing now. And it seems like somewhere in there, if you are going to keep picking the most expensive way to test your children, and that's not what the districts would have chosen, if you're going to keep adding cost in there, it's like textbooks. If you're going to keep changing your standards, they have to purchase new textbooks. Somebody other than the school district needs to be looking at paying for that.
And I think once you do the cost analysis, that's where the discussion will lead to. First of all, what is the cost? Is it more of a cost than what we have already allocated in the formula? And if so, should it be paid for? So
your possible sharing, something like that, and cost savings by sharing of I don't know how to say it. You're the wordsmith.
Okay. Any other suggestions? Okay.
Well, what I hear Mr. Neese saying is he's talking about some way to incentivize, if you will, good behavior that folks would share across districts and gain the efficiencies that we talked about. And I'm not sure how we would say that or how we would go about it. That needs certainly some further exploration, but I think that's what I'm hearing.
Right, and I think we've all made aware that there are regulations that get put on, and nobody ever really looks at if there's going to be an additional cost for it, and then who pays for it. And as you said, districts most of the time are the ones who end up doing that, and probably need to be rectified.
I think Mr. Keithley said it really well, in that he said there is no unfunded mandates; we pay for it all. So every time they have a mandate somewhere in our education budget, the state pays for it every time.
Appreciate that. Any other discussion on this page? Okay. With that, we're going to go to the next page.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I just want to make a note that I'm going to have to leave at noon. So if you don't hear me from that point on, it's not because I'm ignoring you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your time. I know this, other people have plans. So thank you very much. Okay, prioritizing funds within education spending should be focused, well, I think this is what we've already talked about, should be focused first on providing the operating funds necessary to maintain classroom excellence. The base foundation formula and pupil transportation program should be maintained. Two, Outside of the core, all funding should be scrutinized closely and prioritized so that education spending fits within overall sustainable state spending levels.
Do we have a definition of the core?
No, we don't, not as far as I know. Okay, define core.
Do we need to define it?
I don't think we need to do it today, but I think that's something that needs to be put on as we're discussing these back into committee.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I think in the construct of that slide, the core refers to the first point. It should be focused first on the core,
okay,
and then the second.
Of all funding, with core would be first operating funds.
Yes, I think that's what that means.
Okay, does that make sense to you, Mr. Neese?
Yeah, well then scratch out core and put in operating funds.
Okay. Anybody have a problem with that?
No, I don't. In fact, I thought core meant the core educational items, reading, writing, and arithmetic. So I think that we should be clearer.
Gotcha. So we'll just put in operating funds there. Outside of the operating funds, all funding should be scrutinized closely and prioritized so that education spending fits within overall sustainable state spending levels. I think it makes it much more clear. And the third one is capital spending should be prioritized based on relevance to maintaining classroom excellence. Any issues?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty broad. I guess it's
well,
the
maybe
main...
It should just be maybe capital spending should be prioritized.
I can live with that.
Get rid of the rest?
Please.
Any problems with that?
I have a problem with capital being prioritized. I think the capital spending that you're talking about is probably our mandated maintenance of the schools. Is that what we're talking about with capital?
I think it's all capital. I think it's capital from from the turf fields that we talked about to
Okay, so I think, and that's just my opinion, I think in there that, you know, you've just said operating expenses are a priority, and then you just said capital expenses probably should be secondary.
Well, let's look at this one. Do we need this third bullet point at all? Because haven't we really addressed all this in point number two?
Yeah, let's.
I mean, everything has to fit into the overall sustainable state spending level, whether it's capital or operating.
Right, and I think if you put in there that capital is really important, it kind of defeats the purpose of trying to make it sustainable.
Right.
Because the capital needs will never go away.
So can we just scratch number three and figure it's already discussed in number two?
I would be okay with that.
Any issues with that, anybody?
Okay, so Madam Chair, could you please repeat bullet point two again?
Yes, it says outside of the operating funds, all funding should be scrutinized closely and prioritized so that education spending fits within overall sustainable state spending levels.
Okay,
I'm
a little concerned. So outside of the, what are we actually saying here?
So basically, operating funds would be your formula programs. Outside of your what it takes to operate your operating funds, which would be your formula programs that they're running the school, the instructional portion, all fundings should be scrutinized closely, which would be pretty much everything in your capital funding, and prioritized so that education spending fits within overall sustainable state spending levels. I think it's making a statement that although we may have different designations of who you have to ask permission to get funding, it all still comes out of the general fund.
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. Excuse me, Andrew, if you had a comment, you go first.
No, I'm gathering my thoughts, Jerry, so you please proceed.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, a couple things regarding that. First of all, the way this is worded, it's as though we're not scrutinizing operating funds, which I think certainly we should be doing. Secondly, I would speak against removing capital from this page completely. Capital funding for schools is a big ticket item, and it's an ongoing need, and it's not going to go away. And I think it deserves recognition here. and should remain on this page because of the significance and importance of it. As you well know from working with legislative issues, I mean, some of this capital funding is truly health and safety issues for children, and to simply say it's assumed or subsumed within something where there's no mention of capital, I believe is a disservice. So I would share that. Thank you.
Okay, so if we made number two, because maybe if we just said take out outside of the operating, if we would say capital spending should be scrutinized closely and prioritized so that education spending fits within overall sustainable state spending levels.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Okay, and I'm going to jump in here because I think this second bullet point is really, really tortured. I mean, I don't know, you know, if you scrutinize something, you scrutinize something. There's no degree to which you scrutinize. I mean, you know, so to say you're going to scrutinize something closely, that's, you know, it goes without saying. But I think, you know, we're talking about outside the operating funds. The operating funds, Jerry's got a great point about capital because it is such a huge chunk. But we should really boil this down into something easily digestible. You know, all funds should be scrutinized and prioritized based on, you know, health, life, safety, you know, fitting in within the sustainable state spending levels. I mean, I just think this is incredibly tortured, and I think there's an easier way to say it.
Okay, and I think what the point is in this particular one is, and the reason scrutinized might have been put here versus in the first one, we have a pretty good process on the operating funds, you know, and how it goes through the budget process. When you start talking about capital, you know, all sorts of things kind of get added in with, you know, not the same look, you know, because it's then a lot of times based on the legislator in their area and what they may prioritize versus an overall picture. And should that system be looked at more closely?
See, and I agree, but I think we're trying to get to the same place, but I think there's a much more clear way to say that.
Oh, I agree. If you have it, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Because if I'm understanding you right, you know, as we all know, when the budget gets kind of deeper and deeper into the process, more stuff happens that not everybody's aware of, right? Is that what I'm understanding you saying?
Well, it's just, I think I'm not going to say we don't read the capital budget.
It's easy for a $10 million roof to turn into a $10 million tennis court. That's what you're saying. Okay, I'm kidding. I think we need to say, like I said, keep it more generic, more broad, because, you know, all of the funding, you know, down to the capital should be prioritized based on ABC, you know, with the caveat that it fits into the overall state spending plan.
And maybe as simple as capital spending should have a process, because right now it doesn't have much of a process to prioritize or whatever. I mean, I agree with you. I think there's a better way of putting it. I think what we're trying to say, too, is that all the stuff goes in, has to fit into basically the same box.
Yeah, and you might throw something in there about transparency. I know that word's overused, but it makes the case that, hey, we want to know from point A to point Z how this develops.
Does anybody have any suggestions?
Well, and I have to agree with Andrew that I didn't care for how that was said, but I knew what the intent was. And I think the intent is overall to have a capital spending plan. And it seems kind of crazy to say capital spending plan in an overall plan. But as legislators, we need to be able to know what the plan is and how to fund that plan and when to fund that plan. And I think that that's what that bullet point is discussing, is that there should be a prioritized plan. I think I said planned enough times, but on how we would spend the money, and especially when we are tightening our belts, that there are certainly things that may not be part of the plan.
So capital spending plan needs to fit within overall sustainable state spending levels?
Can I
weigh in on this one, because this is like a tortured sentence. So basically what I'm understanding is if we're taking the assumption that we have X amount of dollars, mm-hmm. that, you know, we want a majority of that money to go to operational expenses, and then we have to take care of required health and safety, things like that, because, you know, that's what we lost that last lawsuit on, was the state wasn't adequately maintaining. So maybe, you know, maintenance or adequately maintaining will have a priority over other capital projects. You know, it'll be operational, health and safety, adequate maintenance, and then, you know, other wants instead of needs. Because what we have now is everybody needs something, so basically everybody can get something. And so we have a large amount of capital spending going on that, you know, if you look at it at a stand back 10,000 foot level, you'd look at like, well, does that make sense 20 years from now to have that particular thing done that way? Do we really need that big a school here when, you know, our population's dwindling? And my thing is like, you have to, capital is a large part of your budget on education. I mean, it's up there with the retirement and health. And anything you can do to say, you know, we're going to prioritize it, or the legislature is going to look, and it's going to be the checklist of health and safety first, followed by, you know, needs because of an expanding population, followed by wants. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, how about this? A process needs to be developed for capital expenses, expenditures.
Because the current one is inadequate to the task or something.
But we don't have one right now.
Exactly. Inadequate to the task.
Well, there you go with the plan. And I
so
like
we
how
have
you
an
said.
Actual process or a plan on how to evaluate these. We would go through what you're talking about here. And but first of all, we got to know what the process – we need to speak about what a process would look like.
There you go.
Well, and I'm being told Deed has a process, but I want to make sure people realize that we don't. Legislators
yeah.
kind of just add some things in there outside of – they have a process, I think, for their maintenance portion of it and some for the buildings because of the Casile case. But then we even have a whole additional issue. So maybe we take all those processes together and find out why some of our urban schools don't ever make it up that process.
Thank you. Madam Chair,
sorry,
that's just
my own issue.
Jerry, I thank you for raising that. I just wanted to clarify for anyone who might be listening that the department does have a specific process for prioritizing requests that come for major maintenance and for capital, other capital school construction. And that is a very specific process that they have to follow. And the funding for that, of course, comes from the legislature. And as you said, beyond and above that, there's a different, the legislature has their own system for funding capital requests that include school projects. So I think we want to clarify that. I at least I did, and you did as well for those listening.
And I think on the process, it's even Deed's process, I think, you know, I think we should look at it because we have heard that some districts get on it many times other districts may get close, but then drop
mm-hmm.
down on it again. So I think we need to understand that. So can we live with a process needs to be developed for capital expenditures, and then we can go from there and separate that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else on this page before we move to new ways of thinking?
Yes, Madam Chair, sorry.
I'd answer the phone, but it's not mine.
Okay.
Not mine either.
Okay, I wanted to go back to the first bullet. So I wanted to kind of understand, and I've been reading this a number of times. So within education, spending should be focused first on providing the operating funds necessary to maintain classroom excellence. The base foundation formula and the pupil transportation formula should be maintained. Okay. I'm not quite sure. Can you tell me in a nutshell what you're trying to say here?
I think these are the highest priorities that we have, is the formula programs, which and the pupil transportation. Those are the two top priorities.
Okay.
Over everything else.
Okay. Now, this is where we get into our prior decision. Our prior decision on the page under funding, we basically said, look, we're going to tell the public that current education funding isn't sustainable. And you heard Mr. Keithley arguing that we're going to have a shrinking amount of education dollars. So if we're going to say the base foundation formula and pupil transportation program should be maintained, I mean, a person's definition of maintained would be certainly at least keeping up with inflation. So, you know, when we talk about this stuff, in all of this stuff we're going to talk about in the future about, you know, boarding schools and distance schools, I mean, you have to realize that on the page, the last page, we've already said, look, we don't have any money, and we don't see it getting any better, basically. And so when we talk about this stuff moving forward, we have to realize that, you know, this committee's already painted itself into a corner.
Well, and I'm going to disagree with you in the fact of, I think the legislature has already said that these particular things are of different importance because they are in statute, where a lot of the capital spending that goes on is not. You know, so I think, you know, we're not really stating something that, because it would take a statute change in the first place to decrease these amounts. To say it stays with inflation or not, it does not state that at this point of it. But for our discussion, you know, that capital is usually, and even right now, and when we look at the operating and the capital and the overall, what's usually reduced first is the capital budget over the operating. So
I don't disagree with you, but you know, so basically what you're saying is, you know, we'll continue to, the first bullet point is we're going to continue to abide by the law because the statute says you got to pay for base foundation formula and pupil transportation. But I'm just saying, you know, when we make statements, you know, that people are going to read and interpret, just like when you craft legislation, I mean, when we say that these programs should be maintained, what exactly is the definition of maintained? Should we be keeping up with inflation? You know, or should we just keep them around and that's really not, maintenance really doesn't have anything to do with it? Because really what you're saying is, you know, it's the law, so we're going to keep them.
Can I address a point there?
Go ahead, Mr. Neese.
Andrew, when we had a discussion, I think you had a conflict or something. One of the things that we were talking about is that once you do establish your funding level, nobody on the task force had a problem with making sure that that funding level would keep up with inflation. In fact, we had talked about that. I think the big thing is we haven't defined education. We also haven't defined what is a mission-critical set of things you have to have at a school. For instance, in Anchorage right now, they're looking at a shortfall, but the first thing they're cutting is what I would consider a mission-critical item, which is teachers. I mean, that's the local control aspect of it. So in the operational part of it, maintaining it, I would like to see some kind of, they will maintain, you know, the status quo on, you know, your number of your teachers to student ratio or something like that, because the problem is with having local control is we didn't tell the districts what they have to have in order to have the franchise of the state of Alaska school. So we haven't said that you have to provide a school nurse. We haven't said you have to have art and education. We haven't said you've had and that's part of the problem. So when you give the budget back to the school board, they will cut where they choose to cut. And by putting operation out there to maintain, the problem I have with that sentence is not that we're going to maintain it or that we're going to inflation proof it. My problem is you don't tell them what they have to maintain. You don't tell them they have to have X, Y, and Z, that their buildings have to be at a certain capacity. None of that has been passed down in statute. So we're maintaining the funding going down the road to the school district, but we're not maintaining where they have to spend it, and we're basically not doing that part of it. And that's the part that I have a problem with the maintenance part of this.
Over the top of the sheet, it says prioritizing funding. And I think what the sheet is doing is saying operating is first, capital is second.
Right. And it's, but we don't say what within operating is the primary. And in the state of Alaska education, we don't say what is the top couple of priorities in operating a school.
I think as we look deeper into, you know, how much money is put in, how the formula works, how the money outside the formula works, we're going to get into that details. At the next meeting we have, I have sheets for all of you with a breakdown of operating expenditures as well as maintenance and all the others in a more general type of location so that we can get into a deeper conversation.
Okay, so we're back to operating takes priority over capital. Okay.
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I'd just like to add a side note on that, on David's comment. And
please do.
You know, we do require school districts to spend 70% of their funding, operating fund, on instruction or obtain a waiver from the State Board of Education. And there are, it's not as though we just give school districts money and pay no attention to where it goes. The state does, in fact, do that. And school districts, do their best to operate within those confines. The real issue here is how much local control do you want, and what's the relative value of making decisions at a state level and versus a local level. And if it's appropriate to make changes in the amount of authority given to local school districts, in what cases and under what conditions and for what reasons would it be best to make a change in terms of local control? Thank you.
Very well put. Any other discussion on that page?
Yeah, I would just, again, I just say, you know, we need to be careful. I mean, this is obviously what this task force is saying. When you look at this, it says that, you know, that we're going to maintain the base foundation formula pupil transportation programs. I mean, you know, we even heard from David Teal that the base foundation formula hasn't really been maintained to keep up with inflation for the last 4 years. That aside, you know, the conversation about money outside the BSA is important as well. But, you know, I think there needs to be a recognition there that, you know, maintenance means maintaining it.
And can I just comment on that? And we keep going back to this rate of inflation on the BSA. But if you calculate all the money that we've put into education outside the BSA, we have exceeded inflation. And I have a graph that can show you that. I mean, we focus so much on the BSA, but there's so much more educational money going in than just the BSA. And that's my problem with the accountability on what the school districts are using this excessive amount outside the BSA for. There's no limit on what they can do with it. We can designate it for transportation, we can designate it for maintenance, we can designate it for energy, but there's no requirement for that to take place.
Okay, so Representative Millett, I don't disagree with you, but then we shouldn't be saying what we're saying. I mean, you know, what we're talking about here is the base foundation formula and pupil transportation. I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, the $25 million for security. I mean, that's what I said, outside of the BSA. But if we're going to say something, it should mean something.
Okay,
you're right, and I agree with you, Andrew. But what irritates the heck out of me is that the legislature is always getting blamed for flat funding education, which is a true untrue statement, totally untrue statement. We have not increased the BSA, but we have increased money time after time after time outside of that funding formula based on the needs of the districts.
So if we change bullet point number one to within education, spending should be focused first on providing the operating funds necessary to maintain classroom excellence, period.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make everybody happy?
It
does me.
It does me.
Okay. Any problems with that?
No, I think that's better. Thank you.
Not a problem. Nobody can say that we did not look into this carefully. Okay. So, with that, we are going to move on to the next page. New ways of thinking. And some of this we've pretty much already discussed, so let's see how it goes. Bullet point one, achieving a sustainable future will require new ways of thinking. Two, developing regional residential centers of educational excellence, which facilitate funding at the levels required to provide students with ongoing state-of-the-art opportunities.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, go ahead. That's why I stalled a little.
Again, two pages back, you know, we said, look, I mean, here's my question, and this is, you know, this is exactly what you face and you're going to face for the next 90 days. Where's the money coming from? I mean, that's the question. We're developing regional residential centers. We all saw the wonderful things that are happening in Kotzebue. It's like, where's the cash coming from?
Anybody else want to jump in? I agree. Do we want to keep this right here, or do we want to restate it?
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. If I may jump in here, I'd like to. As you recall, I think it was at our November meeting, the task force allowed me to make a presentation on residential learning centers. And so we, as we talked through that, I provided the task force with an update on cost and shared with the task force that in the previous legislative session, Senate Bill 47 passed, which had several proposed changes in it, and all changes in that bill, with the exception of increasing the stipend amount to residential schools, was approved. And the legislature determined, as I recall, that they wanted to hold over the funding increase until the upcoming session. I shared the proposed amount of funding increase with the task force at my presentation. And again, what regardless of the issue of where the money is coming from, I would like to speak to the issue that residential schools, the stipend amount to fund residential schools is significantly lower than the actual delivery cost of residential programs. And so I would like to, and also it's my understanding that a bill has been pre-filed this year to increase that amount. And so I'd like to put that on the table because I think these are wonderful programs. They're serving a tremendous, a big unmet need in rural Alaska. And they're serving currently, we have 1,400 students involved in either year-long or part-time residential programs, and those programs are in peril because they're already operating at a significant loss. So with that, I'll turn the mic back over to you and thank you all for listening.
If we would go to, and I'm not skipping any pages, but it sounds like I am, if we go to the last page where it says flexible education delivery, we again talk about residential schools in here.
Yes.
And on number two, it was suggested in one of the emails I got, increase the number of residential schools where cost effective. Would that address the issues? If we drop number two here and we just address it on this page instead, and then we also have choice instructional opportunities, again, where we're going to look closer into boarding, charter, virtual homeschool, and public neighborhood schools, does that sufficiently talk about residential centers, Mr. Covey?
Yes. As long as we under the area, under I bullet two on the last page where it says increase the number of residential schools, if we can at that time speak to adequate funding of the stipend program, I would be very happy.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead for right now. We're going to take out number two on the new ways of thinking, and we're going to readdress it in a few minutes. Does that work?
You bet.
Awesome. Everybody else okay? Well, I must be wearing you down. Okay.
No. That's us thinking.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to move on as you're thinking then. Okay. Number point three, reconsider the current level. I don't know if reconsider is the word. Reconsider the current level of facility cost sharing between the state and localities. Consistent with local control, increased local contribution may not only be necessary, but a better way to ensure the facilities are built and maintained efficiently. this kind of goes back into that we heard from districts that some of the buildings they built because of regulations that are within deed that, you know, you have to have certain size hallways, open space, all the other areas. So this is what it's hitting on is some of that regulation. And whether or not, you know, 70-30 when it comes to bonding is the right amount. The whole looking at how we build buildings. Are we okay with that?
I have a okay. I'm trying to think. We have a currently working through the court lawsuit talking about local contribution. So that's probably going to be on the horizon in 10 or 15 years from now. But I'm just trying to figure out how new ways of thinking ties in with old ways of funding construction. Because we're still using a construction model that went back to the 70s that was supposed to be a one-time construction model. And here we are 40 years later, and we're using that same model. So I don't understand the new thinking on that part of it. We're still using the exact same way of funding school construction and maintenance as we did 40 years ago. So where exactly in there is the new thinking?
Maybe we need to analyze what we're doing so that we can find out what's wrong with it. Analyze the current level of facility cost sharing.
Well, and I might pitch in that there are areas that we found that we incentivize not the best behavior, maybe I hate to use that word behavior, but the best practices in construction. And so relooking at analyzing the best practices used in Arctic and Alaska construction should be what certainly that's one area. And I think
right.
that when you talk to local communities, I mean, they know what construction works best in their area, and sometimes it's laughable what we have allowed architects to convince us to do in areas that just don't work.
Well, yeah, but my concern is if we're looking at the sustainable budget, we have, I think it was $1.8 billion in bonded construction debt sitting out there on the table according to deed, and we're on the hook for that for 30 years. So it's the process of the construction for schools. I mean, we're supposed to establish and maintain a system of schools. It doesn't say anything about buildings. And the argument you have between organized and unorganized areas is who's paying for it. And there's no incentive for maintaining something if you're going to get it replaced for free. And there's no incentive of being cost-effective as a district if the state's going to pony up 70 cents on every dollar that you spend.
Well,
I think
that's what I was trying to say in regards to incentivizing good behavior.
Well, I think we have an opportunity with schools where we fund 100% to put criteria on those buildings. I think we can have a best practices. You know, we have a lot of places that we can go to look for best practices for Arctic schools and have one singular model, like we talked about, the McDonald's model. Everything is exactly the same. That's not far-fetched. I mean, that process works. There's going to be modifications because of the size and the location. But other than that, I mean, having maintenance be the same in every single school in the Arctic or in each district so they can share the maintenance costs and share maintenance employees and share parts and share all the things that go along with having similar construction and similar, you know, heating and ventilation and energy efficiency requirements. That's not far-fetched. We should be doing it in all school districts that the state is contributing to. That's our money. We should have a say in what that is. We shouldn't just let school districts say, I want to build this monumental school. I mean, I can show you some schools that were way overbuilt, and we paid 100% of those costs, and nobody ever thought to think about, well, what's that going to cost to operate 10 years from now? And you're right. And so I think, you know, we should have agreements with the community that here's your school, here's the best practices, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to replace it for
35 years, so you have 35 years of figuring how to maintain it and make it work.
And
Okay, wait, before we go. Okay, so since this worked so well a while ago, if we cross this one out and we go to the next page, okay, when we're again talking about school facilities, I think it will fit in the next page better.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to cross this out. You can come back to it if I'm wrong. Okay, so we're going to go to the next page. And before we do the top one, let's go to the bottom since we're already on this. Emphasize standardization in school facilities with the goal of reducing overall construction and maintenance costs. Do we add use best practices for funding construction and maintenance projects? Well, that
I don't think we should use the word emphasize. I think we should shall standardize schools. We shall standardize schools.
Well, how about just standardization of schools? Just take out emphasize altogether.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that it should be a requirement, especially when we are doing 100% of the funding. You know, if you look at DED's requirements for buildings, there's no checks and balances. Requirements, and then off they go. Off the engineers go, off the designers go, off the architects go.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just a couple of questions. How many new schools do we build every year here in Alaska?
I think we're still in the Kasaili case, so we're looking at just what we fund without the 70-30, because that's in a whole different realm.
Okay.
I think we're building like one a year. I think we have one or two more left, and then
okay.
I don't know. We'd have to have somebody from DEED then come in and.
Okay, so basically we're building one new school a year.
In the REAAs, but then you
okay.
get into the districts. Matt Sue just went out for a substantial bond package. There's one here in Fairbanks currently now. I think there's a lot more bond packages going for probably more of upgrades.
Okay, so I know here in Anchorage, I don't believe there's any new schools proposed. So I guess I'm trying to understand the process, because if I remember the testimony correctly, when we had this same conversation, this exact same conversation in committee, and I believe it was Deputy Commissioner Morse, when he was asked, hey, you know, we're funding these 70-30 schools and they're building these Taj Mahals. I thought he was very clear that before they approved anything, whether it was 100% reimbursement or 70-30, that they had to meet certain criteria, and those criteria spelled out square foot per student. I mean, I thought we covered this ground.
Wait, let's answer this question. It's square footage only? So how
okay.
high the ceilings are and a lot of the other that we've seen, they only do it by how much square footage per student that school is going to hold. So
right.
it doesn't go into any more of the design portion.
And can I pitch in just as a matter of a technicality, Andrew? They utilize outside dimensions. And if we're talking about building a place that maybe has 6-inch insulation, outside dimensions don't incentivize somebody to use 6-inch insulation, because you'll use up maybe even a full classroom or two just in insulation. So I think best practices that private industry would use is they would look at what's smartest to do and what's long-term in maintenance.
Okay, because my question was more of a clarification, because I thought the deputy commissioner had covered this. I thought there was like checks and balances in place to make sure that these large schools weren't being built where they weren't needed, and so I must have misunderstood.
No,
I thought that's
what it was first.
No, there's very little oversight on the buildings. The Department of Ed doesn't have anything other than those very few requirements. And what I'm talking about is standardization. And it's not just replacing schools, Andrew, for the committee, it's replacing roofs. It's replacing boilers. It's replacing windows. They should all be standardized. We should have a standard protocol when things need to be changed. So it's not that it's not costing us, you know, we have 19 vendors with 19 different R value ratings for their for their schools. I think we should standardize things. We should be a little tougher on what we're building. It will save us money. Our maintenance costs are through the roof. We're saving 12. I think what we're saving in Anchorage by just changing the lighting is we're saving $12 million a year on our electricity bill. I mean, you know, we're standardizing the lighting in the Anchorage School District. It's smart.
Yeah,
Madam Chair,
that the Anchorage School District, since the mid '90s, when they built Kincaid and Cassoon in the same year, they've been using standardized constructions. But I guess my big question is to what degree really are we talking about? I mean, is this a huge problem or is this just something we see on the horizon? I guess that's my question.
Can I answer? Commissioner Holloway, back when Tony Knowles was governor, would have loved this argument because she got a resolution through the legislature saying Alaska will adopt a standard school model. Never happened. So I think when you talk about new ways of thinking, and that one we're working on the construction, and just to tie it in with what Representative Millett's saying, maybe it needs to say that the state's influence on the school design will be directly proportional to the amount of money the state's putting in.
Okay, we're getting a little too detailed. Not that I don't like it, but, you know, I think we've all
well,
talked about that.
It's
a little more discussion.
It's the golden rule. If Anchorage wants to fund their school fully, then go ahead and let them do the full design work. If they are going to come to the state and ask for 70% of the money back, the state needs to look at that investment in the school and say, you know, you probably don't need this. You might go with that. Because right now, the minimum requirements, they're not that tough to meet. And the state in Anchorage, they're actually using their own school design criteria. So we're getting two new schools rebuilt at about $100 million.
Madam Chair.
Yes,
I would like to back up to Representative Millett's idea. I think there's a great opportunity in identifying and establishing prototype schools for different geographic regions of the state of Alaska and moving forward with that concept. I'll stop there.
Okay, so I think what I'm hearing is that I don't know whether we want to take out – we might want to change the word emphasize because I think we want to better understand how the standardization and all this would actually work. And right now we don't know. We still have a lot of questions on the maintenance and on the construction portion of that. So is that what we're looking at?
Yes.
So instead of emphasize, what do we want to do with the standardization of school facilities with the goal of reducing overall construction and maintenance costs using best practices?
I would change it. I would just strike the word emphasize and start with the word standardize, school facilities.
Okay, so it would say standardize school facilities with the goal of reducing overall construction and maintenance costs using best practices. Okay, everybody happy with that?
Yep.
Okay, so we're going to move up to the top one on the same page, because we're down to only one more page then. And I kind of rewrote this a little bit so it sounded better. Evaluate distance learning opportunities through the ongoing use of technology. I don't think we need new because it's all technology. Compare its effectiveness against one-on-one learning approaches. Delivering high-quality education through technology should be a focus, especially in smaller communities, with a focus on utilizing technology to achieve cost reductions. Are y'all thinking?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm remembering back in Keene talking about the distance delivery, and today we're doing the phone distance delivery. You're limited by your technology.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think it has to be within the realm of the available technology, because if you're not going to upgrade all the schools to fiber optic in Anchorage, you're not going to get certain speeds. There's always going to be miss and match on technology. So I don't want schools spending a whole bunch of money on technology and then it sits in a corner. It's what's effective. Like we were having a discussion with Deed about $5 million be better spent just allowing kids to use for it a virtual rather than expanding what we have and hoping that it works.
Okay.
So within that framework of what you're saying, it's kind of like best, most efficient use of the technology and hoping to upgrade it or something like that, or investing in the upgrade of the infrastructure or backbone of it.
Well, maybe we're getting too specific here. First of all, because we're still waiting for Deed to get back to us on what their broadband showed us throughout the state. Evaluate distance learning opportunities through the availability of broadband in each area.
Or prioritize broadband over, you know, the... I don't know. It's like it's cart and horse. You can't have broadband courses if you don't have broadband. And a lot of our districts are on satellite internet. So, you know, you have a technological restriction with that. So I don't know if the priority needs to be on the expansion of the availability or the expansion of the infrastructure to encourage the availability.
Madam Chair, this is Jerry.
Okay.
I think much of the build-out of broadband in rural Alaska is a private sector matter, and it will, as the business case develops, the private sector will expand it. It won't happen any other way. So I think in terms of our focus on technology is to maximize the use of technology for education purposes, given the realities of the delivery system. It can't be any other way. We can't dictate broadband.
Right. So if we cross this one out and went to the last page and look at bullet point 3, it already said, if it said invest in technology that is compatible with technology available in urban and rural school districts, and then maybe something about building on current capacity. Would that pretty much get us where we need to be, because that's the beginning?
This is Andrew. I think so. I think, you know,
yeah.
I think that that's easy to digest, and I think it, you know, it really says, hey, you know, this is important to us. We understand we're going to, as Jerry said, maximize what we have available, but we recognize the importance.
Right, so I think if we get rid of that whole part on evaluate distance learning, blah, 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 and we're going to go ahead and just keep in the portion on the flexible education delivery part. Does that work?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to go to the last page. Okay, and the first one is incentivize school district consolidation. 2, increase the number of residential schools, and this is where I think Mr. Covey wanted to make sure we added something else into that.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Covey, was there something you want to add here?
Yes, Madam Chair. However, I'd like to go back to the first one, incentivize school district consolidation. In that regard, you know, we have many small school districts in Alaska that, and obviously as someone I believe from legislative finance pointed out, the presentation we had early on in our meetings, the administrative cost of operating a very small school district takes a much higher percentage of the revenue than it does in a larger school district, and we have a number of small districts that are located closely together. Some are located within the boundaries of other districts, the operation and the success rate, the available resource that those districts have available to improve the quality of instruction and provide the types of support services that students need to get a quality education are very limited in those small districts. In larger districts, they have more capability and capacity to meet the needs of students and more resources to do that. So I think there are good reasons to incentivize school district consolidation in the state. As we all know, there has been an ongoing interest in school district consolidation. There have been some of it has come through attempts to form more boroughs in the state of Alaska. There's been some arm twisting over the years to get school districts to consolidate, and nothing seems to have worked to date. And I think that as a result of that, we have students that are getting an education that would not be as good as it would be if we had fewer school districts and each of them had more resource to deliver to their individual students. So if there are ways to explore incentivizing school district consolidation, I strongly support that idea, and I would like the committee to spend more time on it, and I would like to hear from some school district board members and superintendents their thoughts on what type of incentive might prompt them to move in this direction. Thank you.
Perfect. And we also found a paper that was done, or a study that was done many years ago about the potential savings in those areas, and I'll make sure everybody gets a copy of that after the holiday.
Okay.
Anything else on incentivized school district consolidation? Because that's exactly it. We want to look into it more and what it might take.
After Andrew.
Oh, go ahead, David.
I was just going to ask, when we're talking about school district consolidation, can we make sure that nobody misinterprets that as, you know, we're trying to make school districts and municipalities join arms, that we're actually looking at reducing the number of school districts in the state? Is that what the consolidation word means in this sentence?
Well, the consolidation means that voluntarily they could go and join each other. I don't think anybody's looking at mandating it.
But what we're looking, but what we're looking at is incentivizing the reduction of the number of school districts in the state to allow for more cost savings.
Well, it's my understanding we actually already have a statute there that actually has $100,000 that's tied to it to get school districts to do this. So it's already kind of like been discussed, but for whatever reason, nobody's really taken anybody up on it because obviously it doesn't have what's necessary.
And if I could, this is Representative Gaddis, and I hate to always say that I know where David is going, but incentivize school district consolidation in my mind means that explore the pros and cons, like we discussed up a few pages up, in regards to efficiencies that school districts can find in consolidation, whether it be with the school district. And I'm not stopping on looking at the boroughs and municipalities sharing costs and consolidating. I mean, I think we need to look everywhere. I don't want to just say between district to district. I don't know what the boroughs or municipalities, but there is some redundancy in how we do things smarter is really what we want to move forward with.
Hey, I'm sorry, can I interrupt? I have a constituent meeting in 20 minutes, so I'm going to have to get out of here. But
we're going to be done by then.
Okay.
So should we do this pros and cons of incentivizing school district consolidation so it looks like we're looking at it, which is what we're doing, versus something's already there? Does that make you more comfortable?
I would rather say we will encourage.
We don't know what the pros and cons are yet.
We don't even know how we would even do
that.
And
that's why
So investigate the pros and cons of
incentivizing school district consolidation.
Yeah.
and I think also I'd like to echo the comments that Jerry said to start this conversation. And I think Representative Gaddis brought it, some municipalities in their local school districts are working to consolidate costs and share in the joint services. And I know the municipality and the school district have talked. I mean, we've heard it's been a campaign issue here for like 12 years, 15 years. And some services can be jointly provided, others cannot, because obviously the two organizations have different missions. But I do think it's worthy to say, potential cost savings with school district consolidation, but also with local, municipal, or borough partnerships, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's what I was trying to say. Is I just didn't want to stop it at school districts. I think efficiencies can be gained, or at least looked at across the board. And well said, Andrew.
Do we want to add in the partnership part?
I think the discussion of pros and cons, and I think partnerships, period. I think whether it be with our municipalities or wherever we can find efficiencies.
Okay, so just want this statement to say pros and cons of partnerships.
I would suggest getting rid of pros and cons and saying we're going to analyze it or we're going to study it. I think that's more kind of positive moving forward. We're going to look at it and see if it makes sense, and we're going to let the school districts look at it and see if it makes sense for them and the local municipalities.
Okay, so analyze partnerships.
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I would agree with Andrew, and I would, and picking up on Representative Gaddis' idea, I think the concept here is shared services at the municipal level or the community level, because we often have city governments and school district operating the same, performing the same business functions, and that type of shared services agreements would benefit everyone. So if we could factor that in somehow.
Okay, so I'm clear. Are we just... What do we want the statement to say? I'm a little lost.
I think we want to explore, analyze the potential benefit of school district consolidation and shared services between school districts and other governmental entities.
Well said.
Yep, well said.
I hope you wrote that down.
I did.
Okay, can you do it one more time for me? Analyze the potential.
Analyze the potential benefit of shared costs. Analyze the potential benefit of school district consolidation and shared services between school districts and other governmental entities.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay.
I wasn't a secretary on my first thought here. Okay, gotcha. Okay. I have analyzed the potential benefits of school district consolidation and shared services between school district and other entities.
Governmental entities.
Oh. Well, does it have to be governmental entities? Can it be any entities?
Well, I guess it could.
I was going to say, do we want to include private in there?
I just say other entities, and
it leaves it open.
Period.
Right.
Good. Okay, moving on.
Okay.
Increase the number of residential schools. What else did you want to add there?
Well, I'd like to ask the committee to consider supporting increasing the stipend funding for residential schools. And it's coming up in this next legislative session, and I think it's... these schools, I believe, we agree that they have significant value. So I think it's going to be critical if we're going to get legislative funding to increase the stipend for these schools, that this committee send that message to the legislature.
Could I make a comment on that?
Yes, please, Representative Gaddis.
Increase the number of residential schools pretty wide open, and I don't believe Mr. Covey means that there's a specific number or that we should just increase overall, but I think it has to be selectively increased to where it makes a cost and a difference, and I would want to be able to fill in some criteria besides just arbitrarily increase.
So it's just in it, underneath the last point here where we're going to look into all these opportunities a little bit more, including what the stipend should be?
That could be down there. That's fine. And,
okay, and
back
we'll make
to
that as one of the first things that are next meeting before the session starts.
Right.
Sure.
Thank you. You're shopping with us.
Go ahead and lease me.
Okay. Any other discussion besides whoever's at the store?
Yes. Hello, Madam Chair. This is Andrew. I want to touch on this. I'd like to spend a minute or two on residential schools because, you know, I really think that the wording, and I think those of us, you know, who get it, you know, really believe that, you know, some kind of a regional or residential schools are going to be the way forward for rural education. And I'd like to see some more meat on this because I know I brought up in the past about, hey, we've already said we don't have the cash. But, you know, look, I think we have to put we've got to plant our flag somewhere. And I think if we go back to the first page of New Ways of Thinking and the second bullet point, the original language, I mean, I really like this language because it addresses Representative Gaddis's concern about, okay, how many are we going to increase? It talks about developing regional residential centers of educational excellence, something we all recognize we need to do. And we could wordsmith with regards to the funding, but I do think that there needs to be of substance. I think this is probably one of the key things for the future of education in Alaska, and I think we need to pay it a little more homage than just saying the number of residential schools. And I really like the language actually under the New Ways of Thinking.
Okay, so if we go and do what Mr. Hawker was saying, we're going to strive under flexible education delivery on the increase in number. We're just going to get rid of that. We're going to go back to the other page where it says develop regional residential centers of education excellence, which facilitate funding at the levels required to provide students with ongoing state-of-the-art opportunities. Does anybody have an objection?
No. Nope. And I would just simply point out that I think that paragraph ties exactly in with one of our principles, which is to provide students with, you know, opportunities.
Perfect. Any other comments on that?
Nope, I'm in total agreement. Sounds good.
Okay, so we've already discussed the invest in technology that is compatible with technology available. I think we really need to put a period there because I don't know why we say in urban and rural school districts. I mean, we need to invest in technology that is compatible with technology that's available.
Yeah, stop there.
And then we need to build on current capacity. Just put a period there. Okay. We're just going to, yeah, we know we need to do that. So they'll just say invest in technology that is compatible with technology available. And then that we'll get into a whole discussion of broadband, what's necessary, sure, what computers are out there, the program, more of what we started when we were in Kenai. And then the last point is choice instructional opportunities. Again, a closer look at boarding, charter, virtual, homeschool, and public neighborhood schools, which is kind of what we're doing in this whole presentation. So mm-hmm. Is everybody okay with this page?
Madam Chair, I am. This is Jerry.
So, go on.
I really appreciate Andrew tying this back to the new ways of thinking regarding residential schools. I think that's right on track. I hate to sound like a broken record, but I would like to come back to this issue of funding, this increasing the stipend for residential schools, because we are, as you know, we've approved new schools to come online next year. And Mount Edgecombe, as you know, does not fit under this program. They have their own funding from a different source of state funding, But we have Galena that's been operating a long time, and Lunana that have been operating a long time, that they have significant evidence to show the delivery cost of residential services is far below the funding level, far below. And in addition to that, we just, in the governor's budget this year, coming to the legislature, the state board approved new residential programs. The program in Kotzebue was approved. A program in Nome that's been operating for 10 years was approved. And Chugach was approved that's been operating for 17 years. And so we're expanding this program, and I think it's critical. If the program is to do what it was intended to do, that we offset the residential costs in a way that more accurately reflects what it does cost. And so if possible, and I know it's very early to get this committee to recommend anything specific, but I do think it's vital that we send a message to the legislature at the beginning that this committee thinks this increase would be appropriate. Thank you.
And I do appreciate that. I don't think it belongs in what we're doing today. I think we need to get the other information out to how we differ from Mount Edgecombe. But I think having something within the next few weeks on this particular issue, I will talk to Representative Gaz and see what we can get moved forward quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will have those districts send you, and so you can share with all the committee members the actual delivery cost versus the funding level so that you have some recent accurate information.
Perfect. That works very well. So with that, are there any other suggestions to this page?
Nope.
Hearing none, on the full package, this is what I am going to do, is I'm going to make all the corrections that, well, not corrections, that's not the right way to put it. All the
revisions.
Revisions, there you go. Put in here, but at this point from what we have heard, because we are not going to come back online today, I will email this out to all the committee members and ask that you, if you have an opportunity to be able to review it just to make sure nothing got missed, I will try to have it to you within the next hour and a half on that and give you a call if I don't hear back within a couple hours on it. So basically what we need now is everybody pretty much, besides the one issue we had, in agreement in what we have gone through today.
Yes. Could I make one point on the last bullet?
No, your time has passed. No, I'm not.
The last bullet, I would like it to say choice instructional opportunities, public/boarding, charter, virtual homeschool, and neighborhood schools. We imply the last public is only for neighborhood schools, and what we've been speaking about are public schools from the very beginning.
Okay.
So, this is Andrew. Just to clarify, so neighborhoods are neighborhood schools the same as public schools?
Neighborhood schools are public schools, charter schools.
I was just trying to make a distinction on what you would call that portion of it outside. So, yeah, neighborhood schools would be your, you know.
Neighborhood schools would be the schools that Andrew and I went to, because at that time, besides what we called correspondence, who folks took it at home, that's all we had. Well, no, that's
right.
Not true. Ed,
right,
because
at neighborhood schools, the term just kind of threw me off. Thank you. Thanks.
Private boarding schools and public boarding schools. So I guess that's what we have been talking about is public boarding, public charter, public virtual, public homeschool, and public neighborhood schools. And the implication on the last bullet is that it talks about public neighborhood schools and it leaves the boarding, charter, virtual, and homeschools kind of out there. I just wanted the public.
So should public go between instructional and opportunities and then name them?
There you go. That works for me. Or taking, I think putting the public in there works.
Right. And then
it's a technicality, but I just wanted to be sure that we don't differentiate one public school from another.
Right. And that was the intent. The intent was just to make sure and it's all public. So it would be choice, instructional, public opportunities, and then just names, and others, because there's probably other ones out there that people would think are public.
Right.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I wonder about the word instructional versus educational. Just throw that out there for other insights.
That's probably a better word. Choice educational public opportunities. I can live with that.
I can too.
I'm going to read my notes afterwards. I'm fine. Perfect. Anything, any other additions at this point? Are we, any objections to what we have done besides the one duly noted?
Madam Chair, this is Jerry. I'd just like to say I think we do some pretty good work over the telephone.
I think, you know, we're showing that we can use what broadband is available. So with that hearing, I'm going to end the meeting here, and I will be on my computer sending you something shortly. Happy New Year. Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.